Nick!
Gentleman!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out and a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. And it is Friday. Hey, yeah! So that means Fly Jams Friday, straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, and we'll kick off the regular features with You Big Dummy. And You Big Dummy, that's where we find real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. We read them on the air, and then Tom and I will vote for who we think is the biggest dummy, and then the third vote goes to the first person who gets through to vote at 312-981-7200. Straight out of context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says something at any time that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then there's Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to the station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show, we want to know about it, and you jot down the day, the time, who said it, send it to Nick D. show@gmail.com. And of course, Fly Jams Friday, where DJ Luscious Hushus will spin all of your favorite R&B and funky and fly jams. So there you go. And speaking of music, we have a great guest coming up. Our buddy is coming in after the 1:30 news. Our pal Lindsey Cochran from Great Moments in Vinyl is going to join us in studio to hang out and talk music. Their next gig, Great Moments Vinyl, they're going to be playing Pearl Jam. And it's on April 25th at Martyrs. So he's going to come in and talk about that. We've had we've had so many people from Great Moments in Vinyl on over the past years. It's a great play. It's a great band that changes members with each show. Lindsey organizes it, gets these people together, and he usually gets, this is absolutely true, he usually gets some of the very best musicians in this city, and they pay tribute to different artists. They've done tons of musicians and bands in the past, and they will be doing a Pearl Jam at Martyrs on April 25th. So we'll get some behind-the-scenes stories and all kinds of cool stuff when Lindsey comes in. That's at 1:30. And then after 2, tomorrow is 420 day, which means everybody who smokes pot is happy. We're going to talk about Carl's Jr. introduces a CBD burger that will happen tomorrow. They'll introduce it tomorrow, and we'll tell you all about that. And then we're going to talk about the best stoner movies. We figure, hey, it's 420. Maybe somebody wants to watch a few stoner movies. So we'll get into some of the best stoner movies. And also this weekend, Sunday, is Easter. So we have some Easter traditions and symbols and where they came from. And why is there an Easter bunny? What does that have to do with the actual holiday? We'll tell you about that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. That's for talk and text. And then later on for your Fly Jam Friday requests. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. The best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So there you go. That's what's coming up on the show or on this Friday morning here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows me with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran will have your Friday morning drive. My producer is Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nick. How are you?
All right. Looking forward to the weekend?
Yeah. I think a lot of fun stuff is coming up.
Yeah,
I'm going to put myself through Hellboy again, see if it's really as bad as I thought it was.
Uh-huh.
But, there's worse things you could do with a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah, that's true. Doing the Easter thing?
Yeah, going out to my Auntie Breege's place.
Yeah.
Going to have some delicious Easter dinner. She's got the best Easter dinner.
Ah.
She makes ham like no one else.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, have a good weekend. It looks like we're going to have some pretty good weather, especially on Sunday for
yeah,
Easter.
Beautiful.
It's going to be beautiful. We'll get the full forecast in the news, and I'll give you some forecasts later in the show as well. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
I'm very good. Very well. Doing very well.
Very good. Very good. Easter plans?
Yes. Oh, yes. I have my two of my kids, the twins, the 13-year-olds. They will be here, and it will just be Pop and the twins. Jeannie's in Wisconsin. So I'm going to have some fun this weekend with them. Oh. And I was talking with you earlier. I think I will do that. I think I will take them to Wrigley Field to that's tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, it's three. I know they have one Sunday.
I got to see what time it is, but
they're all 1:20.
Oh, then Saturday. I'm taking them Saturday. We'll go. I doubt we'll make it into the field. But you know they have a lot of stuff to do around Field now. So
yeah,
I think
we'll
go down there and
go
enjoy
down,
it.
Hang out in Wrigley Field, and for
definitely
nothing like day baseball at good old Wrigley
Field.
Yeah,
they've got that massive screen you can watch the game and you know. So I'll do that
in Gallagher Park.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they call it, Gallagher Park.
It's great, man. It's beautiful.
It's awesome. I got to say,
I haven't been there in a while either.
I've mentioned this before on the air. I don't even recognize that neighborhood anymore, and that's where I grew up. And in about 2 years, I went back. I was in the neighborhood, and I'm like, I don't even know where am I? I mean, it is so unbelievably unrecognizable and different than what it was when I grew up there.
So much has changed.
Yeah. And in not just, in a quick period of time.
I want to say, I didn't make it back up to the north side, because it was the end of the season. And then all the way till the mid next season, I finally went back up there and I was shocked.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's amazing what they've done. But it's weird. It's just weird because I grew up, in that neighborhood, and I knew every sidewalk. I knew every business. I knew everything about that neighborhood. And now I get there and I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm on another planet. And obviously the improvements are amazing, and what they've done for the neighborhood financially and just like, making Wrigley, updating it, 'cause it was, one of the oldest parks in the country, and updating it and making it more modern and putting all that stuff around in the hotel and all that, and the Gallagher Park and everything. I think it's great. It's just weird for me.
I can imagine.
It's just like a Twilight Zone episode. I go there and I'm like, man, there used to be a Franksville right here.
Anytime you go back to your old neighborhood, it's always strange. I know when I went back to do work for the government the second time, I left for 5 years, and when I came back, my mom's, where she lives in the far northwest suburb, she's moved since, but Huntley, it had changed. It used to be, I could tell how to get to the library from her house on the different farms. They would plant different farms, corn, wheat,
that's pretty cool.
Whatever, and I would, they're all gone.
Yeah.
All the farms were gone around, right around her home, so it's weird when things change. But Wrigley Field is special.
It really is.
In the middle of a neighborhood.
Yeah, it really is, and it was great growing up in that neighborhood. Now, when I grew up in Lakeview, the neighborhood was not good. It was a bad neighborhood. There were gangbangers everywhere, and the Cubs were terrible. So that was my experience was, it was this beautiful ballpark in the middle of a bad neighborhood with a terrible baseball team. That's, because my formative years were spent there in the 70s, and the Cubs were terrible in the 70s. They were awful. And yet I'd go to all the games. I could just walk to the park and walk in. You could get a ticket. You can probably get in for like $2.50 or something, or $5 or something like that. And then there was this deal where if you stayed afterwards, a lot of kids would stay afterwards and fold the chairs back up, put the seat that you would fold down, the bottom of the seat, you put those back up, you fold them up, and they give you free tickets. Like if you stayed around and if you did that in the park, they would give you free tickets.
So now, the Cubs have straightened themselves out. Now let's get a hold of the gangs and straighten them out.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, actually, the neighborhood's changed a lot, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
it was not, first of all, it wasn't Wrigleyville when I grew up there, man. It was East Lakeview. Mm-hmm. And it was a rough neighborhood, man. I mean, if you went I lived in Addison near Ravenswood. So, but if you went east of Ashland, it got real sketchy. You know, if it really did. I mean, I went to school at Alexander Hamilton Grade School, which is at Paulina and Cornelia. It's still there. I think it's still there. I'm pretty sure it's still there. And that was kind of like the dividing line. It seriously was. Like, if you went east of that, like, because it's right by Ashland, if you went east of Ashland, it got dicey. It was not a good neighborhood. And for a long time, and we moved out of that neighborhood in 1983. So I lived there from my birth in 65 to 1983. So 18 years of my life were spent there, and knowing every business and everything, walking to Wrigley all the time and walking around that neighborhood and everything. It's fantastic what they've done. I don't want to sound like an old guy going, you know, in my day it was better, you know, I don't want to, but it's just different. And I can't, you know, cause I have, you know, 18 years of memories that were stored into my head. And even beyond that, when I moved away from the neighborhood, I kept going to Wrigley Field to go to the games. It's just very strange.
Well, you still have to keep your wits about you there, because there are roving gangs of college co-eds in Vineyard Vines who might tell you that you're not cool enough to get into Old Crow.
Yeah. It was gradual to see how that neighborhood changed. It was so funny because I moved away in 83, in 84 the Cubs almost went to the World Series. It was one of the most heartbreaking years for me as a Cub fan. But that's when they started to put money into the neighborhood. It was like, oh, wait a minute, you know, and then, and so slowly but surely they started to make the changes. Then when the lights went in 1988, they finally put lights in Wrigley Field in 1988. That's when the bar started to make more money. You know, it just, everything changed, and it just snowballed from there. Into the 90s, they made more improvements, but it was right around 2000, right when Theo came, they started to make more changes in the park. And then, you know, after they made it to postseason in 2015, more huge changes happened. Then they win the World Series in 2016, and then more changes happened. And that's, you know, and they keep changing everything and adding things. Mm-hmm. And I don't even recognize Wrigley Field. I don't recognize the bleachers. The bleachers look completely different. But it's still awesome. It's still the best park in the majors. Have you ever been to Fenway? In Boston?
No.
It's beautiful, man.
Is it?
Yeah. It's second only to Wrigley.
Okay.
I've been there twice, and it really is. I mean, it is an amazing place. It's weird because the last time I was there, there were no seats on the green wall, on the Green Monster. Now they have seats up there. You can sit on top of the Green Monster, which mm-hmm. is really high.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, but when I went twice, and they didn't have the seats up in the Green Monster. So, but great park, beautiful park, historic, just like Wrigley. And let's hopefully see what the Cubs do against Arizona this weekend. It should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I love the fact that it's day games. I love that, you know, it can be like Friday, you know, when I get home this morning, I'm probably going to watch a little TV, take a little nap, and then get up at 1:20 and watch the Cubs in the middle of the afternoon on Friday.
That is my schedule to the
team. Okay, we'll be doing the same thing. All right, it's actually almost about 12 hours from now, Vic.
Woohoo!
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Fawlty Towers has been named the greatest British sitcom of all time. They did a poll of comedy experts and other people, and Fawlty Towers has come out on top as the greatest British TV sitcom of all time. We want to talk about that. I'll read from the article. And if you're a fan of Fawlty Towers, you want to jump in. What are your favorite moments? What are your favorite episodes? Fawlty Towers with John Cleese, Pernella Skills. I mean, it's just one of the greatest TV shows of all time. Ever. Vic, you ever watch Fawlty Towers?
No.
Oh, it's so funny, man. It's on Netflix, I think.
Oh, all right, I'll check it out.
There's only 12 episodes. It was only on for two seasons. 12 episodes. And 12 of the funniest episodes you've ever seen. John Cleese from Monty Python co-created it and is the star of it, and it is a riot. It's an absolute riot. Tom, you a Fawlty Towers fan?
It was a religion growing up.
Yeah.
Having a dad from the UK, you were raised on Fawlty Towers, Only Fools and Horses, and one called Still Game that's mm-hmm. like specifically Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
But Fawlty Towers was like, if you did not know Fawlty Towers backwards and forwards, you weren't his son.
Yeah, well, I'm the same way because, you know, my dad turned me on to Python, and so I was a Python fanatic. And then when Fawlty Towers came to America, of course, I watched it, and it is just hilarious.
I think Basil Fawlty's been voted numerous times the best British television character of all time.
Oh yeah, and he's a total bastard. we'll talk about this. I got a break. We'll talk about this when we come back. We're talking about Fawlty Towers. I'll read from the article. It beat out Father Ted and I'm Alan Partridge as the greatest. It was the top three, and all three of those shows are. Father Ted is hilarious. So, but we'll take a break. We'll come back, talk a little Fawlty Towers here. And then after 1:30, our good friend Lindsey Cochran's going to join us. We'll talk about Pearl Jam and the great moments in vinyl. Hey, you want to see Tom Skilling live in concert? Come on out to WGN-TV's White Sox Weather Day, May 14th. Then watch the Sox play the Indians. Tickets are available at whitesox.com/WGN. That just makes me laugh right there, just the opening music for Fawlty Towers. And it always said something different on the sign outside. It was misspelled in some way on the sign in front of the hotel. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here. Fawlty Towers has been named the greatest ever British TV sitcom. It was a panel of comedy experts that was compiled by the Radio Times in Britain. The comedy series, set in a chaotic seaside hotel managed by an incompetent and highly strung hotelier played by John Cleese, was ranked above Father Ted, which chronicled the lives of three dysfunctional Irish priests and their housekeeper, and I'm Alan Partridge in second and third place, respectively. Alan Partridge, by the way, is the great Steve Coogan, who is just brilliant. Although Fawlty Towers only ran for two series, the popularity of its 12 episodes has endured and are often rebroadcast, with co-writer Connie Booth saying the show succeeds because it allows, quote, infantile rage and aggression to flourish within the well-mannered English society. Basil Fawlty's one-liners have gone down in comedy folklore. In one episode, a house guest complained that he was not satisfied, in which he replied, "Well, people like you never are you?" Another, a guest asked if anywhere serves French food, Fawlty retorted, "Yes, France, I believe. They seem to like it there, and the swim would certainly sharpen your appetite. You'd better hurry, the tide leaves in 6 minutes." A thinly veiled jibe at the broadcaster's current management, Cleese said he was lucky to be working at the BBC when decisions were taken by people who actually had made programs and paid tribute to his co-stars and producer John Howard Davies, who directed the first 6 episodes of Monty Python's Flying Circus. "I'm proud that we are up there with Porridge and Only Fools and Ab Fab and Blackadder and The Office and the thick of it," he told the Radio Times. Fawlty Towers co-writer Connie Booth told the man, who was married to Cleese at the time. She played Polly on the show. "It's unique in being that it's a farce with the plot surprises and precision that requires a lot of style. It doesn't hurt that the star of the show is a 6'5" comedic genius. If he was shorter, I can't imagine how it would have worked." Richard Curtis and Ben Elton's historical sitcom Blackadder, starring Rowan Atkinson, was 4th on the list. Only Fools and Heroes, featuring Peckham Wheeler Dealers, the Trotter family, was named 6th best sitcom. Fawlty Towers was also named the best British sitcom of all time in a survey of comedians and comedy writers back in 2017. So, yeah, it's one of the funniest shows of all time.
If you don't have the top 5 of all of these on DVD, then you're really missing out.
Yeah.
Because it is just the cream of the crop.
There's no question about it. But man, Fawlty Towers. Do you have a favorite episode?
Oh, God. I mean, they start off with such a boom where it's the one where he thinks he's like a millionaire, where yeah. it's the very first episode.
Oh yeah.
Thinks he's like a millionaire,
and the guy who is a millionaire he's mistreating . My favorite, the Germans is one of the greatest episodes of all time, when he bangs his head and don't mention the war, and then he starts doing the walk and all that stuff. That's hilarious. But my favorite is when the kitchen, the chef is in love with Manuel. And he gets drunk and he can't make dinner, and there's big time critics there. So he runs out to get a duck. Remember, he goes to a restaurant in town to bring a duck back, and the car breaks down, and he grabs a tree branch and starts beating the hell out of the car. I'm telling you, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And then the very end of the episode, when it's not a duck, he took the wrong plant, he took the wrong tray, and he pulls the lid off of the tray, and it's like a cake, and he reaches in to see if there's a duck, like, in there. And then he goes, "Duck's off," and that's the end of the episode. Genius. All right, greatest British sitcom of all time. In any country, it's one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, we get the news, and then Lindsey Cochran, Great Moments in Vinyl, is going to join us. Oh, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. That means all of our regular Friday features will be coming up. Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and, of course, Fly Jams Friday. We're going to be talking, you know, Saturday is, tomorrow is 420. So we're going to talk about, marijuana movies. Great movies, you know, great movies that are good to watch when you're high. So that's the best pot movies. We're talking about that for 420, and I'll do a little Easter stuff as well. But you just heard Alive by Pearl Jam, and that was performed by Great Moments in Vinyl in one of their rehearsals. And Great Moments in Vinyl, have been on the show several times. The guy who organizes the whole thing is a really terrific guy and a great musician. It's Lindsey Cochran. How are you, Lindsey?
Good morning. Good to be here. Thanks so much.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
And God bless Steve Jobs for those little iPhones. I can bring those to rehearsals, and that's what you were hearing. That's iPhone recording.
Exactly. Well, you guys are doing Pearl Jam at Martyrs on April 25th.
Thursday night.
And now are you guys, first of all, tell everybody about Great Moments in Vinyl.
Great Moments in Vinyl is an idea I had to, for music fans who play instruments, to get together with music fans who like to listen to music. I mean, it sounds like a little tautology there, a little redundant, but the idea being, we're excited about this music. We find albums that we love to play, albums we grew up listening to, albums that inspired us to become musicians in the first place. And we put that music on stage for other people. This year we've done a Joni Mitchell tribute. We did the Court and Spark album with some other things. I don't know if you know the song Down to You from Court and Spark.
But I do.
It's got this, almost Copland-esque kind of piano-based thing with an instrumental section with winds and stuff, woodwinds playing. Our band did that. At the end of that section, the audience applauded.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
Just in the middle of the song.
Right in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is that people get into this music. They're so excited by it. And they hear things that maybe the original artist never put on a stage.
Yeah.
So,
well, how long have you been doing Great Moments in Vinyl? How long has it been an entity?
Five and a half years. It'll be 6 years in August.
Really?
And we have loved every moment of it. Thank you for bringing us. I think we appeared with you for the first time in our second year.
I think so. Yeah. I think we were pretty early on. We've had you on. Yeah, we do. We go way back.
When I started the group, vinyl was still a thing. I guess vinyl is a thing
again. Yeah. Yeah.
But it feels a little like, I don't know, that some of the audiences, like we did Brothers in Arms, we did the Dire Straits album. We did their first album and Brothers in Arms. Two of their biggest albums, yeah. Right? We're in the middle of Brothers in Arms and some of the audience calls out, play something we know.
Hello? Something we know.
8 million copies sold and you don't reckon? Did you buy this one, sir? No? Anyway.
This was a Dire Straits fan who...
Yes, exactly.
Who asked you to play something that they know from Brothers in Arms.
We were getting into side two or something.
It wasn't like you were doing Telegraph Road. Like you were doing,
right.
Well, Telegraph Road, by the way, which is my favorite Dire Straits.
I do like that. We considered that album.
That's my favorite Dire Straits.
Had that show sold well, we would probably come back with more Dire Straits. But anyway.
Well, okay. So you've been doing that, and you gathered together some of the best musicians in the city.
I've been blessed. I've been fortunate.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're music fans. So these guys that make a living playing music. I started off working with the Old Town School of Folk Music people.
Right.
Instructors there that I got to be in a band and occasionally would grab a student or two, but these were guys that and women as well who knew how to make this music, whatever albums we were doing, whether it was Springsteen or REM or U2, and it grew from there. It became this thing that took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
Where they would bring in a friend of a friend would bring in a musician who was talented, who was really good, who made a living at it.
Yeah.
And he would be so geeked about it that he would want to be a part of it. And then he'd bring his friends in.
Right.
So we just did Paul Simon's Graceland, for example. And you remember Bill Grady, who was he's been my Jimi Hendrix, my Dwayne Allman, my David Gilmour, and my, someone else whose name is, but he played, in the Graceland set. It did all the South African guitar stuff. I'm not a great bass player. I'm a good bass player, but I'm not great. And he said, you know, to cover that Paquito Kamali fretless bass stuff from Graceland, I know just the guy. And he did.
Yeah.
So this guy comes in. I got an accordion player who played with Old Shoe, local band.
Mm.
A drummer that I love working with, Jonathan Reed, who's been with me for five or six different shows. And then Greg Woods, who sang my David Bowie and my... Elton John, the end of last year, we did Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah.
So that was the core band. Then the Ladysmith Black Mambazo stuff.
Yeah.
Do I have too much energy for this hour?
No, please.
The ladies, you know, I figured I have to have some African-American singers do that. You know, I can't just have white guys up here and do this kind of music. So Greg works for a Chicago vocal ensemble called Mosaic. They're a soul ensemble, mixed race, a very diverse group. And he brought in three of the singers from that. So if you go to our website, greatmomentsandvinyl.com, go to the Paul Simon page, there's a version of Homeless on there that'll give you goosebumps.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Plus the version of You Can Call Me Al and The Boy in the Bubble.
Well, Graceland is such a classic record.
It is.
You know, it is really one of the most acclaimed albums of all time.
Absolutely. Well, and it's got some stories.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's the other thing, really quickly. That's the other thing about Great Moments in Vinyl. It's not just like going to see just a regular sort of tribute
band.
Not
a cover band, yeah.
No, not a cover band. These are great musicians who really love the music, but you also are a storyteller. You in between
Absolutely.
Songs, you tell stories about the songs and about the band and about the inspiration, and that's one of the many things that makes it unique.
Oh, Lordy, have I got some Paul Simon stories. I mean, he got that idea to do an album of South African music from a woman who was currently unemployed. A friend of Lauren Michaels, Lauren had introduced her to Paul, and she had this idea. I've got a solo album I want to produce. Would you help produce it for me? Oh, and here happens to be a cassette tape of some songs I want it to sound like.
Yeah.
Paul took the cassette and made it his own. He actually, the next time he saw her, said, oh, by the way, I bought the rights to some of those songs so I could sing over them.
So those are great stories. And see, now so what do you do, you know, like for right now, you're probably... You know, like knee deep in.
I bought visual aids for a radio show.
Right.
Here's this book, Pearl Jam Anthology, The Complete Scores. So you look in here, and some music geek somewhere has transcribed all the guitar parts, the bass parts, the drum parts, and the vocals and other instruments that appear on it. So I got this book of, you know, every song from the albums 10 through Lightning Bolt. So basically all their albums.
Yeah, basically.
And this is our Bible for making the charts and figuring out what are we supposed to do here.
Yeah. Pearl Jam is a band that I've seen, I think, more than any other band. I've seen them live more than any other band, and it's in double digits.
Yeah, right.
And they're one of my favorite live bands of all time, and that's what they've become. That's interesting how they've kind of changed, because you know when 10 first came out, and Versus and that group of albums, there was the whole grunge thing was happening in the early 90s, and they were sort of at the forefront of that. But they've become, you know, their strength is their live music.
Yeah.
I mean, they have good records and everything, but people love them because they've become sort of like a jam band.
There was something they did on that very first album that really touched a nerve with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even the band itself, Pearl Jam, will look back at that first album and say, we don't like it anymore. It's got too much reverb. It's too produced. It's too slick.
Yeah.
But, you know... Yeah, that's where their money is these days, is doing the live tours.
And they're great. I mean, last time they played Wrigley, I went, and as good as they were when I saw them. I saw them in 91. I saw them in 91 at the Metro, open for Nirvana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. And that was like, I don't even think 10 was out yet. I mean, it may have just been released.
That's interesting. They opened for Kurt Cobain and company, because Kurt was actually... dissing them in the press.
I think that was after they became successful.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Because
he was considered, obviously when Nirvana's album came out, it changed music, completely.
That's interesting, because there wasn't a lot going on at that time. I was just looking at what the hit albums were in the preceding years.
Paula Abdul and stuff like that.
But even among rock albums, you had Rolling Stones' Steel Wheels, you had Elvis Costello's Spike, you had a lot of R.E.M. Green, that sort of, you had established bands, but not really at the peak of their form.
Yeah.
So people were kind of, and I've talked to friends at XRT, and because I used to work there, I know Marty Leonard's and some other folks there, who have said that the early 90s was a difficult period for that radio station finding music for them to play, just simply because there weren't the new the new U2s out there.
Right. It was a time at that time, 90, 91, like I was saying, you know, in the
Guns N' Roses and Met hair bands.
They were still around.
Yeah.
But like the popular stuff, the stuff that was selling was like the dance and the pop and the Paula Abdul and the Mariah Carey. That was the big stuff at that time. And all of a sudden when this, came out and the hair bands were still selling, And it just blew the hair bands out of the water. Like when that, oh, you can rock and you don't have to have hair, you don't have to have hairspray.
Maybe it's like a reaction to disco music. Yeah, remember back in those days?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was the same kind of thing. It was a sort of a revolution thing happened there. But then they were certainly at the forefront, Pearl Jam.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a break.
Sure.
And when we come back, I want to talk more about this gig and some of your other gigs that you've had in the past. And I definitely, of course, always want to run down who's in the band with you this time.
I have stories.
Because you have some great... I mean, you always get the best musicians. It's unbelievable.
I have
anyway, Lindsey Cochran is with us. Great Moments in Vinyl is an experience to enjoy. Are you guys... What albums are you playing? You're playing 10
10, and then a smattering of things that came after that. So heavily into Verses and Vitology.
Yeah.
Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Got a bone up on that before the show. You know, I've learned how to say Gossard and Ament and the other band names.
Right.
But yeah, and then... taking it through. Actually, we're going to do the Temple of the Dog piece.
Hunger Strike.
Yeah.
You're doing Hunger Strike.
Yeah.
That song's a jam.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love that song. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's Lindsey Cochran. And Great Moments in Vinyl will be performing Pearl Jam and more, all of 10, and lots of other stuff. And it's April 25th at 8 p.m. at Martyrs. And you can go to greatmomentsinvinyl.com for more information. We'll come back, talk more with Lindsey after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio is here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features will be happening. It'll be the Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, and, of course, Fly Jams Friday. You just heard some Pearl Jam there performed by Great Moments in Vinyl, a great band put together by Lindsey Cochran. And they do tributes to great albums and great bands and artists who they love, and Lindsey gathers some great musicians. And the next time they play will be April 25th at Martyrs, where they play the music of Pearl Jam. Lindsey, welcome back.
Thank you very much. That was my man Bill Grady singing lead on that. Bill was saying that he loves doing Pearl Jam because, I mean, you've seen him play or heard him play guitar in the Hendrix stuff before.
Yeah.
He's a monster on the guitar, and there's a lot of Hendrix influence in Pearl Jam. But also, Eddie is a baritone. He's got a low voice, and so does Bill Grady.
Yeah.
You know, Bill grew up listening to Zeppelin and The Who and Rush, and if you're a guy with a voice like mine and his, you know, you're down here.
Yeah.
You're not hitting those high notes.
You can't hit the Geddy Lee.
No.
No, you can't do that. Well, one of the things that I think makes Pearl Jam so unique is Eddie Vedder. He's just such an interesting front man and such a great singer, but a very unique, and nobody else sounds like Eddie Vedder.
He's got a growl.
Yeah,
there's something in that voice, and he's like a caged animal let loose. I think the whole band was, you know, I mean, you know, the backstory there, two of the guys had been in another band destined for fame. They had a lead singer and a record company interested in them. I think he even got a whole album produced and recorded and ready to release. And the lead singer, who had had a heroin problem before, overdosed, died. And suddenly these guys are like, we're back at square one. Where do we go from here? And, when the first album came out, when they had the tour, they were ready to go.
Yeah.
They'd been pent up. And it's like, you know, Eddie, who's been waiting to get in the band, these other two guys saw their career end and then start again.
Yeah.
Boom.
It's an interesting story. And now you were telling me about some of the other gigs that you recently did.
We did the Joni Mitchell show at the first of the year.
Joni Mitchell at the beginning of the year.
Followed up with Beatles with Strings.
Now, how was that?
That was amazing. I mean, we got a string quartet. We've hired string players in the past, but I had this idea. I mean, we do albums usually, but that's because that's our calling card at Martyrs when we play.
Right.
We basically have a residency that we appear there so often.
Sure.
But I had this idea. There's all these Beatles songs that have strings in them. And when we've done the White Album and albums like that, sometimes we would hire a section to do that. But I thought, what if we put all those songs in one set? So we took Eleanor Rigby and Yesterday and A Day in the Life and I Am the Walrus and Across the Universe and Long and Winding Road. And I, you know, got one of these score books just like this and copied out the string parts. And it was an amazing set. Phil Ingotti was my singer.
Oh, sure.
And I got Joe Camarillo on drums and Jim Ryan playing keyboards at that one. And then four fine string players, whom I can't name them all, but the leader was violinist Philip Roach, who also plays violin in our Led Zeppelin Physical Graffiti show that we're doing at 210 Live in Highwood a week from Thursday. So whatever, the 2nd of May, I think that is.
May 2nd. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's May 2nd.
Where he does the opening to the song In the Light. It's got that high.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he does it on violin.
That's amazing.
And then he plays on Kashmir.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. So that sounds great. And then the great moments in vinyl at Pearl Jam. What's some of the stories or one of the stories that you can
tell
about?
Well, this one I have to read when we do the song. This comes from the Dallas Morning News, January 8th, 1991. A Richardson High School sophomore described as a loner who had been in counseling fatally shot himself Tuesday in front of a classroom of about 30 students. Jeremy Wade Dell, 16, who had transferred from a Dallas school, died instantly after firing a .357 caliber magnum into his mouth about 9:45 a.m., according to police. Because he had missed class, the teacher in his second period English class told Jeremy to get an admittance slip from the school office. Instead, he returned with a gun, police said. He walked directly to the front of the classroom. "Miss, I got what I really went for," he said, then placed the barrel in his mouth and fired.
Yeah,
and going to the song Jeremy from that. I mean, it sets the stage. It's Eddie Vedder wrote about heavy stuff.
He did.
About depression, about sexual abuse, about homelessness, about this student in Dallas. I mean, how sad that I will read that story. I'll probably say this from the stage that night. I read that story. We can't look back on it and say, remember when school shootings were a thing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
here we are. What, 30 years later?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, so who's playing in the band?
Got Bill Grady doing the lead vocals and not playing as much guitar. We've turned that over to Scott Tipping, whom you met once before. He plays Led Zeppelin. He was my Jimmy Page and played Davy Johnstone stuff when we did the Elton John "Goodbye Yellow Brick Road."
Yeah.
So he was on that guitar stuff. We got Jonathan Reed on the drums, who is just a monster. He was the Mitch Mitchell when we did Hendrix.
Oh,
he's played in another three or four shows. He was in the Hendrix or the Elton John show. He was in Fleetwood Mac Rumors. He was in the David Bowie Ziggy Stardust. Gives you an idea of some of the others. And then we also have a guy from Milwaukee, Jeremy Peters, a good friend of Bill Grady's, who's driving in for rehearsals and the gig itself. And he's a monster on the guitar. So, yeah. I mean, it's if you love guitar, this is a show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, how long have you been a musician?
Me? On and off since I picked up a recorder in grade school, I think.
You know, started with the recorder, right?
Well, you know, it wasn't that mandatory. I think we also had a Magnus organ, you know, the little cord on the side.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad was an electronics person, so I got one of these cheap little tape recorder mics and glued it on the inside, tried to see if I could make it an electric organ
right
through an amp.
Right.
But anyway, I took up the trombone. That was my first real instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, Chicago was hot, so I loved their stuff. When we did Paul Simon, I got to play in the horn section.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We got a horn section with John Bowes playing saxophone, whom I think I've had on before.
Yes, he's been in.
And he lined us up with a trumpet player who'd played with Tower of Power for 10 years.
No kidding.
Way.
Wow.
I mean, we did My Little Town, you know, the screaming horns. Yeah. This guy was nailing all those high notes.
Wow.
It was like, that show was so special. We're going to do that again. I talked to the folks at the Beverly Arts Center. They want to have us bring that show down there. That'll be in September.
So. Yeah, yeah. So you're keeping busy then.
Oh, too busy.
Yeah. Well, that's great though. I like, you know, the stories about how you get these musicians, because it's like this chain reaction happens.
Absolutely.
Because you get a couple of people, they know a couple of people, and then they know blah 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 blah. It's like that old shampoo commercial. Where you tell somebody, and they tell somebody, and they tell somebody, and there's like 25,000 people.
Word of mouth is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Well, this Tower of Power trumpet player, I'm ashamed I've forgotten his name right at the moment, but he was so impressed. He said, "Man, I'll play with you guys anytime." You know?
Yeah.
Most musicians say that after the fact, you know? I try to pay well, so I don't think they're being abused by performing, but they get something out of it. I think it's because you work with an audience that, you know, it's not a wedding band crowd.
Yeah.
It's a group of people who love this music, and you're presenting it to them and helping bring back memories for them and make connections for them. And it's just a special night.
And the other thing that it does, if the band that you're playing the music of, you're clearly going to tap into their fan base. So people that are there want to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They already like the music. It's not like you have to impress the crowd. with the music because they already like it.
And that's the other thing. You know, we set out to respect the music but not replicate it. You know, and I hope people know that coming in. And we don't seem to have a problem with that. But, you know, if you come to us doing Paul Simon, it's not going to sound exactly like Paul Simon. It's not going to sound exactly like Pearl Jam. It's going to be a bunch of fans sharing, you know, basically getting up on stage and saying, isn't this great music? We love it. Don't you love it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always fun, man. It's always great. I've had so many really incredibly talented musicians, you know, walk through these doors and play live in the studio. And in fact, one of them that you brought in is going to be on next week.
Nice.
Rachel Drew is going to be on.
Excellent.
And she's fabulous.
We did. Tom Petty. There's a little community group called Edgewater Artists in Motion.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they've hooked up with us, and we've done some shows from there. They have access to a former corner grocery store there on Granville between Broadway and Sheridan.
Yeah.
And so they've decked it out with lights and kind of made a little stage at the end. So we've done three or four of our shows. We did our Elton John show there.
Right.
Did a Beatles and Stones 50th anniversary for Let It Bleed and Abbey Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just did Tom Petty, Damn the Torpedoes and more.
Yeah.
And Rachel happened to be there, so Phil goes up to her and said, hey, you could do Stop Dragging My Heart Around if you
very cool.
So she made a guest appearance on that.
That's great. Yeah, she's really amazing. Incredibly talented, got a great voice, and she's a really interesting woman. I always love having her on.
She works hard.
She does. And because of these connections that, you know, I've made through you, through Great Moments and Vinyl, I've had many incredible musicians on their own. Come in who have worked with you. And so it's opened up the field here on this show, you know, and I thank you for that.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we do the Paul Simon show again, I would love to bring in some part of that. I think I could get the chorus to come
in. That'd be fantastic. That would be fantastic. Yeah. So the next one is Great Moments and Vinyls plays Pearl Jam, and it's on April 25th, and it's at Martyrs. And you can check out the website and get your tickets there. And also, how much is it to get in?
Oh, my gosh. I think 12 or 15, probably 12 in advance, 15 at doors, something like that.
Something like that. But it's always great. And Martyrs is a great room. And that's like your sort of, like you said, your residency.
They gave us our first chance, and we built from there.
Yeah. And it's a great room to see a show in.
Yes, it is.
And the sound is always great. They're very, very, very cool people over there.
Absolutely.
And it's a great location, too.
That's, I think, where the name Martyrs come from. It's the owner and his wife. You know, they martyr themselves to the music that they want to present.
Yeah, yeah. Now, so people might recognize your voice, from a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But right now, if you are watching TV at some point and a commercial for MeTV FM.
MeTV FM.
That's you.
Because no longer am I saying smooth jazz.
Right.
It's MeTV FM.
That's you. That's the voice of MeTV.
I love being over there. I'm working with Rick O'Dell, a friend of mine from the WNUA days.
Yeah.
And we just hired a fellow by the name of Bob Lawson, who used to work at WJMK, which is the former old
station. Lots of success you guys are having over there.
Yes, indeed.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. It's always a pleasure to have you in. I have such a great time talking to you. Thank you for coming down to the studio this time.
I love it.
Yeah.
This is good.
Awesome. Okay, so that's Lindsey Cochran. Great Moments in Vinyl. Play Pearl Jam on April 25th at Martyrs at 8 p.m. All right, we're going to take a quick break. The news is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. If you've ever seen Up in Smoke, then you know that that's how the movie opens. And it's also featured in this movie. Listen closely.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Yes, it would.
I think I've had someone ask me that before, like say that.
Say, man, you got a joint.
Be a lot cooler if you did.
Be a lot cooler if you did. the reason why we're talking about pot is because tomorrow, it's Nick DiGilio here. Welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Tomorrow is 420, April 4th, April 20th. And somehow that became Weed Day. And the number 420 became associated with weed in many, many different ways. Because of 420, we also will be talking about a new menu item that Carl's Jr. And, you know, Of course it was Carl's Jr. No other fast food joint would do this. Of course it's them. They're going to introduce a CBD burger tomorrow on 420 in honor of Weed Day. And then we're going to jump into the best stoner movies of all time. But I often wonder why. We've talked a little bit about this in the past, but how did 420 become Pot Day? And how did the number 420... Vic, have you ever looked into this as a newsman, as an investigative reporter?
I should have, because about 30 seconds ago when you brought it up, I thought maybe I should see what that was, how that got its name. No, I don't know.
Well, I got a story here that says, where does 420 come from? Depending on who you ask or their state of inebriation, there are many varieties of answers as strains of medical bud in California. It's the number of active chemicals in marijuana, they say. It's tea time in Holland. It has something to do with Hitler's birthday.
Wait, I love that. It's tea time
in Holland. It's tea time in Holland.
That's the code.
We may as well blow some weed, man. It's tea time in Holland. All right.
Because I'm never mind.
No, but you know, somebody who's high sitting there going, hey, man, I just read it's tea time in Holland. We got to blow some weed.
You sounded like Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah, I did kind of sound like Bill Clinton, didn't I? I've never attempted a Bill Clinton before.
That's a pretty good Bill.
That's not, that wasn't bad. It's those numbers that in that Bob Dylan song multiplied. The origin of the term 420 celebrated around the world by pot smokers every April 20th. You know, and the celebration is just going to be bigger now that it's becoming legal all over the place now.
Yeah, 420 might be a reference to the afternoon. Every day.
Every day, man. 420.
420.
Pot smokers, it's long been obscured by the clouded memories of the folks who made it a phenomenon. The problem is we're never going to get a straight answer because everybody was high when they came up. Whoever came up with the 420 thing... they probably don't remember. I don't know why it's 420, man. It was Christmas week in Oakland, 1990. Stephen Bloom was wandering through the lot, that timeless gathering of hippies that springs up in the parking lot before every Grateful Dead concert, when a deadhead handed him a yellow flyer. We are going to meet at 420 on 420 for 420ing in Marin County. At the Bolognese Ridge Sunset Spot, read the message, which Bloom dug up and forwarded to the Huffington Post. Bloom, then a reporter for High Times magazine, and now the publisher of celebstoner.com and co-author of Pot Culture, had never heard of 420ing. The flyer came complete with a 420 backstory. And it says this, 420 started somewhere in San Rafael, California in the late 70s. It started as the police code for marijuana smoking in progress.
Oh, interesting.
After local heads heard the police call, they used the expression 420 when they were referring to herb. Let's go 420, dude. Yes. Bloom reported his find in the May of 1991 issue of High Times, which the magazine found in its archives and provided to Huffington Post. This is the story I'm reading from Huffington Post. The story, though, was only partially right. It had nothing to do with a police code, though the San Rafael part was dead on. Indeed, a group of five San Rafael high school students, known as the Waldos, by virtue of their chosen hangout spot, a wall outside the school, coined that term in 1970. They're called the Waldos because they hang out at a wall and blow weed.
Classic.
They coined the term in 1971. The Huffington Post spoke with Waldo Steve, Waldo Dave, and Dave's older brother, Waldo Patrick.
Waldo Dave.
Yeah, man, Waldo Dave. Come on over. Bring Waldo Steve and Waldo Patrick, Waldo Dave's older brother. And they confirmed their full names and identities, which they will keep a secret for professional reasons. The Waldos never envisioned that pot smokers the world over would celebrate each April 20th as a result of their foray into the Point Reyes Forest. The day has managed to become something of a national celebration in the face of official condemnation. This year's celebration will be no different. This was written a couple of years ago before all the laws started to pass, so it's not going to be as... There's not as much condemnation now when people are celebrating 420 Day because everybody's blowing weed now. Let's see. The officials at University of Colorado at Boulder... Oh, there's a shock.
Really?
There's a shock that they're going to celebrate. They're going to blow weed at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Seriously? Jeez. They're pro-weed there?
Nah. I don't know.
Must be a mistake.
Yeah.
And, of course, at the University of California, Santa Cruz, which boasts two of the biggest smokeouts. As another April 20th approaches, we are faced with concerns from students, parents, alumni, and regents and community members on the repeat of last year's 420 event, wrote Boulder's chancellor in a letter of students. On April 20, 2009, we hope that you will choose not to participate in unlawful activities that debase the reputation of your university and degree, and will encourage your fellow buffs to act with pride and remember what they are. Students and locals show up at round four, light up at 420, and they'll be gone shortly after. No bands, no speakers, no chants, just people getting high together at 420. The code often creeps into popular culture and mainstream settings. All the clocks in Pulp Fiction, for instance, are set to 420. Is that right?
I'm going to do a little research, but I'm pretty sure that's correct.
I've seen Pulp Fiction 9,000 times. I've never noticed that before. Is Tarantino a pothead? I mean, I wouldn't be shocked.
I don't think he never struck me as someone who did it a lot, but he was definitely hanging out with dudes that did.
No question about it. I mean, well, first of all, Eric Stoltz is genius in that movie, and he's high in every scene. Just one of my favorite moments in that movie, in Pulp Fiction, is when he's in his bathrobe, and he's got a bowl of Fruit Brute. He's eating Fruit Brute cereal, which is, you know, the monster cereal that you can't find. Like, you've got Count Chocula, you've got Frankenberry, and you got Boo Berry. Fruit Brute was the werewolf fruit flavored cereal that was part of that line, but you could never find it. So the fact that, of course, Tarantino, you know, Captain Reference and Captain 70s is going to have that as part of... But he's eating the bowl of Fruit Brute. He's got a TV tray in front of him. He's got eating the bowl of Fruit Brute. He's high, and he's watching the Three Stooges. And it's, "Hold hands, you lovebirds!" It's the Shemp episode where Shemp has to get married. And when the woman smashes the birdcage over Emil Sitka's face, the reaction that Stoltz has to it is like, oh, like it's really painful, like it's ruining his high. He's just, man, I'm just trying to, I don't like to see somebody get a birdcage smashed over their head. I'm just trying to eat my Fruit Brute and be high. But, so, we're going to have to check that out.
I'm actually looking it up right here. And from none of these are super, it's not the New York Times reporting on this, but.
Yeah, the New York Times is going to report on what the clocks are set on in Pulp Fiction. It's going to be a headline of the Washington Post. Do you realize that all the clocks are set to 420 in Pulp Fiction?
Well, apparently it is not true. It's a common urban legend.
Okay.
But folks have got, although a number of clocks are, not every single clock. Yeah.
Okay.
A number of clocks are set to 420, though.
All right.
This investigative report.
This is important, man. We need to know the history of 420 before we go on to talk about stoner movies. Yeah.
Say, man. You got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Seriously, Dave Wooderson, one of the greatest characters in the history of motion pictures. Without question, one of the greatest characters. One of the greatest debut performances by any actor ever.
Just knocks it out of the park.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable. I love everybody. I love every character in that movie.
Yeah.
I adore every frame of that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I don't even know how many times I've seen it. But, man, Dave Wooderson. Yeah, man. And then, I mean, come on. How do you not love this?
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age. Yes, they do.
Right outside of Emporium.
Man. And of course, this incredible wisdom.
Let me tell you this. The older you do get, the more rules are going to try to get you to follow. You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
That's right. And that's actually, man, that's actually what the whole movie's about. That sums up the entire movie.
That's the beauty of it.
Such a great movie. My God. When we get to stoner movies, I mean, come on. I mean, if that's not listed, then come on. All right. We have a few more details to where this 420 thing came from. I think the whole thing is just so ridiculous. Waldo's. Why are you guys named Waldo's? We hang out by the wall and we blow weed. That's why we're Waldo's.
I figured it would have been because, I don't know, they were hiding somewhere, or they all wore striped sweaters.
Exactly. And the red hat.
Yeah. If I was in high school and there were a group of dudes that all smoked weed and would wear striped sweaters all the time,
they would be the Waldo's.
They'd be the Waldo's. Yeah.
And then where's Waldo? They're smoking weed. That's where they are.
And that'd be the code, like, hey, man, you know, what are you doing this for? I'm trying to find Waldo.
what would be really funny is that they brought out a Where's Waldo book, and then when you find him, he's got a joint in his mouth.
I mean, we don't know. I've had
Waldo could be a pothead. He dresses weird.
Yeah,
Waldo might be a pothead. I think we're onto something here.
Hmm.
More investigation reporting. Vic, get on that. You're in the newsroom officially. Find out if Waldo's a pothead, will you?
Right on it.
We cover the important stuff on this show. You know what? This is.
I don't even know what would happen if I Googled, is Waldo a pothead? I think our IT manager might have.
You're going to get an email from Art.
They monitor this stuff, Nick.
What do you, why would you, at 2:20 in the morning, why would you?
I'm doing a story, okay? That's what my excuse is for what I Google.
I'm doing a story on whether Waldo, the animated character, is a pothead or not.
Right, right.
IBA Station of the Year.
I'm telling you.
Five years in a row,
I'll
baby.
Tell you what, man. This is why I got a plaque. In the sidewalk. That's why I got a plaque in the sidewalk, because a radio like this. All right. Let's take a break, and we got more 420 details to get to. We're also going to tell you about a pot-laced sandwich that you can get at Carl's Jr. And then we're going to talk about stoner movies. All right? Okay. Catch Living Healthy Chicago. I'm sorry. The timing of this read. Oh, man. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy Saturday. And it's on Saturday, too. It's on 420. Make sure you watch it at 9 o'clock a.m. on WGN-TV. That is accompanied by one of the greatest final shots in motion picture history. Just the open road. Heading to go get those Aerosmith tickets. We're back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Not 420 WGN. It's 720 WGN. We're in the live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we are live until 5 a.m. All the regular Friday features are coming up after 4 o'clock. We'll start with You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then Luscious Hushes. Can we hear your statement?
Yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
Yeah, it's him. He'll be in to get all your fly jams ready to go. All right, tomorrow is April 20th, which means it's 420, which means it's Pot Day or Weed Day. And we're talking about how that possibly happened. The code itself does pop up in Craigslist postings when fellow smokers search for 420 friendly roommates. It's just a vaguer way of saying it, and it kind of makes it kind of cool. You're in the know, but it does show that's how it's in the mainstream. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, Tarantino has written some good pothead stuff. I mean, Brad Pitt in True Romance is one of the greatest potheads in film history.
Oh, it's spectacular.
He's unbelievably funny in that movie.
Yeah.
Why don't you get some cleaning products? Don't you condescend to me.
Yeah. I've used that a few times in conversation. Oh my God. Don't he's, you condescend
oh, he's
me.
Brilliant in that movie. He's brilliant in it. The Waldos, you know, those guys that hang out by the wall and blow weed, do have proof, however, that they used the term in the early 70s in the form of an old 420 flag with numerous letters with 420 references and the early 70s postmarked. They also have a story. It goes like this. One day in the fall of 1971, harvest time, the Waldos got word of a Coast Guard service member who could no longer tend his plot of marijuana plants near the Point Reyes Peninsula Coast Guard station. A treasure map in hand, the Waldos decided to pluck some of his free bud. The Waldos were all athletes and agreed to meet at the statue of Louis Pasteur outside of the school at 4:20 after practice to begin the hunt. We would remind each other in the hallways that we were supposed to meet up at 4:20. It originally started at 4:20 Lewis, but we eventually dropped Lewis, or the Louis, I should say. Waldo Steve said for the Washington Post, the first forays were unsuccessful. The group kept looking for the hidden crop. They were high. Wait till you find the crop to blow weed. Don't try to find the crop while you're loaded. We'd meet at 4:20. We'd get into my 66 Chevy Impala, and of course we'd smoke instantly, and we'd smoke all the way out there. And smoked the entire time that we were there. We did it week after week. We actually never found the patch. That's hilarious. But we did find a useful code word. I could say to one of my friends, I'd go 420, and it was telepathic. He would know what I was saying. Hey, you want to go smoke some, or do you have any, or are you stoned right now? It was kind of a telepathic way. When you just hear it, our teachers didn't know what we were talking about. Our parents didn't know what we were talking about. So it was brilliant. The one thing to identify the origin of the term, indeed, Wikipedia and Urban Dictionary already include references to the Waldos. The bigger question is, how did 420 spread from a circle in California stoners to around the globe? Marin County was kind of ground zero for counterculture, and it all started in San Francisco, of course. The Waldos had more than just a geographic connection to the dead. Mark Waldo's father took care of real estate for the dead, and Waldo Dave's older brother Patrick, managed the dead side band and was good friends with bassist Phil Lesh. Patrick told the Huffington Post that he smoked with Lesh on numerous occasions, and he couldn't recall if he used the term 420 with him, but he guessed he must have. All right, so there you go. Somehow it's not shocking that the term is tied somehow into the Grateful Dead. That somehow is not surprising as all.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. We're going to break for the news. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about a new menu item at Carl's Jr. And then we're going to talk about the best stoner movies of all time. And we would love to hear from you if you've got comments on any of this stuff. Or if you're 420-ing. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We'll break. The news is next. Pickford's car slowly driving around the parking lot. Oh, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Friday.
Yeah!
Which means Fly Jams Friday coming up a little bit later on. We've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and You Big Dummy. That's all going to be coming up in a little bit. Welcome back. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to get into the best stoner movies in a couple of minutes. If you want to join us, we'd love to hear your choices via text or talk. 312-981-7200. What are the best stoner movies in your opinion? Before we get into that, because tomorrow is 420, as we were discussing that, it's weed day, and we were just talking about how 420 and the number 420 became code for weed. We can thank the Waldos for that. So we just talked about the history of that. So now, because it's 420 tomorrow, Carl's Jr. is going to introduce a CBD burger in honor of 420. And again, as I mentioned before, it's no surprise that Carl's Jr. that would do this, considering the kind of food that they serve at Carl's Jr. and the kind of commercials that they do and the kind of stuff that they've done in the past. Though cannabis oil, CBD, is often name-checked as one of the fastest-growing food and drink trends, its legal status for use in restaurant food is murky, so it's surprising to see news this morning that Carl's Jr. will this weekend become the first national restaurant to add a CBD-infused burger to its menu. Do you know how many of these things they're going to sell? They're going to sell out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because, first of all, if people who go to Carl's Jr. are probably high anyway.
Well, there's an important distinction.
Okay.
Because the CBD, and I'm sure they get into this, the CBD thing is not, it's not what makes you all hazy.
Uh-huh.
This is the stuff that people, that they turn into like a balm for like pain relief.
Yeah.
Or like itch relief.
Right.
So I am curious about what's that going to do to you? Like, you're going to eat this burger and you're just going to kind of feel good, which will be a first for anybody who's ever visited a Carl's Jr.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't feel good after eating at a Carl's Jr. I mean, I think their smallest burger, you know, has 45 pounds of bacon. It's a half-pound slab covered in every kind of liquid and cheese. And then a hot chick eats it in slow motion. That's basically what basically Carl's Jr.'s MO for years and years. In the press release, Carl's Jr. says the Rocky Mountain High Cheeseburger Delight. It's called the Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High Cheeseburger Delight, which has the initials of CBD, Cheeseburger Delight, will be available only on April 20th at one restaurant. Oh, it's only at one restaurant. I thought maybe it was going to be nationwide. And of course, it's in Boulder, Colorado. Of course, it's in Colorado. It's in Denver. It's located at 4050 Colorado Boulevard in Denver. The price is $4.20. The voice is $4.20. Sales begin at 6 a.m. when the restaurant opens. Oh, man. You imagine the people that are going to show up at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday to order a pot burger? What kind of...
Hell, I would.
What kind of people are going to show up? Oh, man. The burger contains two beef patties. It's topped with pickled jalapenos, pepper jack cheese, crunchy fries, and Carl's Jr. Santa Fe sauce infused with hemp-based CBD oil, produced by Colorado-based Bluebird Botanicals. CNBC reports each sandwich will contain 5 milligrams of the hemp-derived CBD extract. CBD is a non-psychoactive compound derived from hemp, meaning it won't get a person high like THC does, but its proponents say CBD promotes a feeling of calm, well-being, and relaxation, making it a popular addition to foods and beverages, even as the legal basis for such is sometimes unclear. The recently passed Farm Bill moved hemp, cannabis, or cannabis derivatives with the low THC thresholds below 0.3% by weight to its own category, removing it from the federal list of controlled substances. But the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not yet cleared CBD-infused food and drink products for sale. The agency will hold public hearings on the matter in the next few months. Currently, as former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb stated in December 2018, it's unlawful under the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act to introduce food containing added CBD or THC to interstate commerce or to market CBD or THC products as or in dietary supplements, regardless of whether the substances are hemp-derived. It's illegal to introduce drug ingredients into the food supply or to market them as dietary supplements. This is a requirement that we apply across the board or to food products that contain substances that are active ingredients in any drug. Because the FDA has not yet approved such foods and beverages, even while marijuana may be legal in certain jurisdictions, restaurant food and beverage containing THC or CBD often is not. Health departments in New York and LA have recently cracked down on CBD-infused foods like cupcakes and lattes and cocktails, and in Maine, where marijuana is legal, the health department has also ordered shops and restaurants with CBD-infused products to cease their sales. Carl's Jr. and its sister chain Hardee's has a history of innovating in the realm of fast food burgers. In 2001, the chain began offering the $6 burger. This was before burgers were considered gourmet, much less in fast food. And the idea of a burger that cost $6 was novel. The half-pound cheeseburger went on to become one of the chain's top sellers. The takeout has reached out to Carl's Jr. to ask about where and how the CBD-infused sauce is prepared and whether that affects its legality. And we will update the story for a response. So there it is. It's from thetakeout.com. So get in line if you're in Denver, because they're going to start selling these things at 6 o'clock in the morning.
That's quite a breakfast.
Yeah. The Rocky Mountain High Cheeseburger Delight. Two beef patties topped with pickled jalapenos, pepper jack cheese, crunchy fries, and Carl's Jr. Santa Fe sauce, which is infused with CBD oil. And it's $4.20.
Remarkable. What a time to be alive.
Well, I'll tell you, man. Yeah, Carl's Jr. We don't have Carl's Jr. here, do we? I mean, we have Hardee's.
We've got Hardee's.
I know that.
Yeah, because I think the first and only time I went to either a Carl's Jr. or a Hardee's was, I think it was like traveling on I-80, which is like the only appropriate time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, I don't know. Got to get something to eat, and I need something to just stick to my ribs. Went through a Hardee's. Regretted it immediately.
Yeah.
I had heartburn for the next 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to Carl's Jr., not here. It was in California. And it was just heavy and big, you know. And I've been to Hardee's many times. I actually like Hardee's. Yeah, I don't know. A pot-infused burger.
Well, you know they have CBD-infused cocktails here in Chicago.
They do.
Yeah, so it's a place called Young American.
Where is it?
It's in Logan Square.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah. it's on Kedzie.
Yeah, okay.
But it's in lieu of alcohol, so they don't put alcohol and CBD in it. It's instead of alcohol,
oh,
you can get
a
CBD drink.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
If you want to partake in something.
Do they not, can they not put booze in the drink, or do they choose not to?
That's a good question. I feel like either way is good. I mean, if they choose to, I think that's good to just be like, yeah, you don't need to have alcohol and CBD at the
same
time.
Right.
Even if it is not the stuff that gets you stoned.
Right. Well, it is going to alter your brain and your body in some regard. CBD infused drinks. This was all because I haven't been in the bar scene in a long time. I haven't been in a bar in about 4 years. So, I don't know what's going on. And the bars that I hung out in, would not do CBD infused drinks. They barely did shots and beers, the kind of bars that I used to hang out in. So, well, we can't get it unless you want to take a red eye to Denver to get there by tomorrow at 6 a.m. Maybe just go to the airport and jump on the plane, take it right straight to Carl's Jr., get yourself a couple of Rocky Mountain High Cheeseburger Delights and chow down, and then start feeling really good about yourself. So, yeah, sales begin at 6 a.m. in Denver. So if you're listening in Denver or something, get ready. Maybe if we have any Denver listeners, if we have anybody who is in Denver, maybe they can try it and report back to us next week on what they thought of the pot burger that Carl's Jr. will be selling only for one day on 420. All right, well, there you go. We have the history of 420, why it's weed day, and to celebrate 420, get yourself a pot-infused burger at Denver's Carl's Jr. restaurant. All right. Now, since we got the food and the history out of the way, let's get to the movies. What are the best stoner movies of all time? And there are a lot of them to choose from. And it's a pretty big subcategory. You know, lots of people watch movies while they're high, and there's a specific kind of movie that people love to watch when they're high, and there are a lot of titles that fall under that category. So what are the best stoner movies ever made? Join us, 312-981-7200 for talk or text. right now. 312-981-7200 for stoner movies. And we'll get into that right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday morning, and that means all of our regular features will be coming up. That's Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and, of course, Fly Jams Friday. We do that every week. Phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Join us right now because we're going to be talking about stoner movies. Tomorrow is 420, Weed Day. So we thought in honor of that, we would talk about some of the best stoner movies of all time. And there are a lot to choose from. Text lines and phone lines are open right now if you want to join and tell us what your thoughts are for stoner movies. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You know, I was just thinking that but Quentin Tarantino does have a lot of pot references in his movies. I mean, Jackie Brown, what does Robert De Niro do? Robert De Niro and Bridget Fonda, that's all they do in that movie is blow weed. And Chris Tucker, man, I'm home, I'm high. That whole thing where Samuel Jackson puts him in the back of the trunk. In the trunk. Yeah. I mean...
You're not a big Chris Tucker fan, right?
No, not at all. I like him in that. There is one movie that I liked him in. I mean, he's tolerable in the Rush Hour movies. I liked him in Jackie. But there was actually a movie that he did. Look him up on IMDb for me, because there was actually a movie that Chris Tucker was actually really, really good in, and I remember being shocked because for me, a very little amount of Chris Tucker goes a long way. And by the way, you know, speaking of Chris Tucker,
I mean, is it Friday?
There's one. No, it's not Friday. You just mentioned Friday, and I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's one of the gold standards of stoner movies. But he was in, and it was a. It was like a drama or something.
Silver Linings Playbook?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. So he's terrific in that movie. Yeah. Leave it to David O. Russell to cast Chris Tucker in that role. Yeah, Silver Linings Playbook. That's the one. But, yeah, so... 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Stoner movies is what we're talking about in honor of tomorrow being 420 Weed Day. Here's what we've got here for as way of introduction. Stoner movies have made a market of their own beginning in the 70s when the original stoner flick hit the big screen. Over time, the 1978 pot-loving Up in Smoke has transitioned from weeded-up memory to one of High Times' classic weed movies. Have you heard of Cheech and Chong, man? These red-eyed actors paved the way for a steady release of stoner films that no hippie could refuse, not even your mom. As marijuana has become more accepted in mainstream, more brainless stoner comedies have hit the scene. There's like This Is the End is a great stoner movie. And Harold and Kumar are great stoner movies. Just be warned, there's an equally as much 3D penis as there is cannabis in the recent installment of Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. By the way, my future ex-wife is in that movie. Dana DiLorenzo, my future ex-wife, is in A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. I think she's billed as hot chick. I think that's an appropriate role for Dana to play. My future ex-wife. So they're doing another Friday movie. How many are there? Three, right?
Well, there's Friday, next Friday, and Friday after next.
Friday after next. And then I guess he's doing a script, working on a script for Last Friday. Now, let's begin the countdown of great stoner movies. And we want to hear what your thoughts are. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Talk and text stoner movies. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, well, back when I was dating a girl at DePaul, and we would blow weed and watch The Wall over and over again on VHS.
I can't imagine watching that movie high. I really can't. I think my brain would explode.
It was bizarre, yeah. And I'm not proud of
but
it.
I can understand, but that seems like a legitimate stoner movie. It's one of those movies that, you know, I mean, Pink Floyd is a band that a lot of people who listen to Pink Floyd blow weed. That's it, you know. So it seems to go hand in hand with the movie as well. But yeah, I love that story. You and your girlfriend would get high and then watch The Wall on VHS.
Well, yeah, we're talking the early 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right, Steve. Thanks, man.
Hey.
There you go. There you go. Stoner movies, 312-981-7200. Tom, I'm assuming you've seen Pink Floyd The Wall?
Many times. Yeah. Many a time. And I was really confused. I remember in the opening when they started with When the Tigers Broke Free.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, wait, that's from Final Cut, which is a terrible album.
No, it's not. Final Cut's a great album, man. It's technically, it should be Roger Waters' first solo album, but it's, I love the Final Cut. I think the Final Cut is a great album.
Agree to disagree.
Oh, I love it.
The Final Cut should have been it was the Final Cut for Roger. Get him out of the band.
Oh, man, no. And I love his solo records. Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, Radio Chaos, all great.
Meanwhile, I'm here listening to Momentary Lapse of Reason like, this is awesome.
No, man, that's the wrong direction.
The Division Bell?
No Division Bell.
No?
No. I'm a Roger Waters guy, man. I'm a big Roger Waters guy.
He was an integral part of the band.
Yeah.
I admit.
After Sid Barrett left, he became like the main dude. It was him and Gilmore were like the main guys.
Well, he took them from writing, you know, Sid Barrett was great and everything, but, you know, what was that one about having a mouse named Gerald or something like that? But and he took him out of that, but he just got so big on his, he got so high on his own supply. You know
he did. Yeah, no, he took over the band. By the final cut, I mean, Roger Waters was calling all the shots. And I loved it. I remember this, you know, I've told the story on the air before. The day the Final Cut was released in the spring of 1983, I skipped school. It was a school day. I skipped school and went to the Flipside record store on Foster so that I would be the first to get a copy of the Final Cut. I skipped school, went, and just went home and listened to it all day. I didn't even go to school. I was like, I'm not going to school because the Final Cut's coming out. And by that point, I was upset. I mean, at that point, I was 15. I was 15 when the Wall came out. All right? And that album is tailor-made for 15-year-old boys. You know what I mean?
I thought it was the deepest thing I'd ever heard.
Oh, yeah. And then, and clearly, you know, with the work that that Roger Waters has done and the movie as well, he's got a serious issue with women. And he's got a weird mother fix. Well, of course, he's got a weird mother fixation. He's got a song called Mother. You know, but there's a lot of misogyny in that record. And in his records, he's got some serious women issue problems. Which you don't, when you're 15, you don't even see that. You know what I mean? You just think, oh, this is a cool album. Oh, look at this. And Comfortably Numb is one of my favorite songs of all time. And my favorite guitar solo of all time is David Gilmour on Comfortably Numb. It's the greatest guitar solo of all time. And so when I was listening to a 15-year-old boy, you're just like, wow, man, this is deep. This is amazing. Oh, man, it's a concept album.
It loops around, man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then as I got older, I realized, oh, it's kind of a silly record, but it's still one of my favorite albums of all time. But I love the Final Cut, man. I back the Final Cut. I think it's a phenomenal album. And Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, Radio Chaos. You went the David Gilmour route, and not the Roger Waters route.
I did, and not because I didn't appreciate Roger Waters and his solos. I mean, they needed to be done because they were just driving each other insane.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, and obviously, God, who's the drummer?
Nick Mason.
I don't know how much he cared with that damn Ferrari friggin'.
Yeah,
drum
well, kit. You know, I mean, the other two guys. You know, it was the band was Gilmour, and at that point, it was Gilmour and Waters. But it was real quick before we break for the news. Did you know the story about how they were shooting a take? Alan Parker was trying to shoot a take. They were on the set, a closed set, with Geldof, and it was the scene where they're grabbing Geldof. They're trying to revive him. Bob Hoskins is trying to pick him up. It's Comfortably Numb. It's during the Comfortably Numb thing. And so they're filming the scene, and someone, every time he yells action, a couple of seconds into the take, someone in the back by the crew is going, ha, 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 and he would call cut. And he would say quiet on the set, and he'd look around, And so he would say action, and they'd start again. You'd hear, ha, 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 ha. So this went on about three or four more times. And finally, Alan Parker turned around. He was looking. There was a big fat dude in the back. And he turned around. He walked out. Sid Barrett. Sid Barrett. So there you go. All right, let's take a break here, and we'll come back with more. Stoner movies is what we're talking about. Get in here, 312-981-7200, talk and text. Hey, it's the first song that everybody learns on guitar.
Woo!
Yeah. Oh, man. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude. We're here till 5 o'clock. It's Friday, so that means Fly Jams Friday will be coming up a little bit later on, along with our other regular Friday features. We'll do Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and You Big Dummy. We'll kick it all off at about 4 o'clock. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are talking about stoner movies. Tomorrow is 420. We told you all about the incredible Waldo history of 420. You can go to Denver and get a pot-induced cheeseburger from Carl's Jr. just on April 20th, starting at 6 a.m. And now we're going into stoner movies. Were you going to say something, Vic?
I was just going to say, I believe it's laced with CBD.
Okay. It's laced with CBD.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Get hip.
You don't get high from CBD.
No, I know. We talked about
it. You did,
that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all just relaxation, man. It'll relax you.
Seem to know a lot about that.
Yeah, what's going on there, Vic?
I do know a lot about CBD.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you insinuating something?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Have you found out yet if Waldo is a pothead?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Got to find him first.
It's hard to find him. It's probably even harder if he's a pothead. He doesn't even know where he is.
Just look for the buffet.
look online at Carl's Jr. tomorrow. That's where you're going to find him.
Yeah.
So, hey, before we move on here, and I want to hear from you guys, the phone and we got a bunch of texts coming in. What are the best stoner movies of all time? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Stoner movies. You weren't here. You were out for a couple of days sick, Tom. But I talked about the history of the cowbell sketch. And how it was created and all that stuff. And then we started talking about funniest and best SNL sketches of all time. And I cannot believe that I did not mention one. I mean, I mentioned all of my favorites, and I cannot believe that there was one that I did not mention, and I feel remiss, and I have to mention it. Are you familiar with the potato chip sketch?
Describe it.
Jason Sudeikis plays sort of like... Do you ever see the sketch Main Justice?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that sort of Southern Colonel kind of thing he does?
Yeah,
well, he did that character first before Main Justice. He was that guy, and he was at NASA. And Will Forte was interviewing him for a job as an astronaut. And what happens, the setup for the sketch is that Will Forte is interviewing him, and he's playing a weird character. He's got a weird... Well, it's Will Forte, so of course it's weird. So... Sudeikis is doing this very strange, you know, Southern gentleman kind of a character. He kind of dressed a little bit like Colonel Sanders. And Will Forte's got a weird mustache. He's doing a weird sort of a Southern kind of a weird, you know, voice. And he's interviewing Sudeikis at NASA to become an astronaut. And so he has to leave to go get, you know, the paperwork. He leaves his office. But before he leaves his office, he tells Jason Sudeikis... He's got a big bowl of potato chips on his desk, Forte's desk. And Forte says, "Now I'm going to leave the office, but I don't want you to eat my potato chips. These are my potato chips, so please do not eat my potato chips." So he leaves the office to go get the thing. And, of course, Sudeikis reaches in and takes a chip and eats it. Okay? So Forte comes back in. He sits down, and he's like, and he looks at the bowl, and he counts the chips. He remembers how many chips are in there. And he calls his secretary, and the secretary is played by Blake Lively. Janelda is her name. And she comes in, and he's like, they finally accuse him of eating the potato chip. And then they start screaming at him about, "You don't eat other people's potato chips," and all that stuff. And it just is ridiculous. And then Sudeikis spits the potato chip up back into Forte's hand. And he, you know, he puts it back in the bowl. And so then he, and so Jason Sudeikis, like, is now, you know, he gets kicked out. They scream at him. They get in his face. You can't even help me put the potato chip. You know, the whole scream, the whole thing. And then so Sudeikis gets up. He's all, you know, upset. He gets up. He's like, well, this did not turn out as I had hoped in my wet dreams. And then he stands up, and there's like a an inflatable sort of like round seat cushion. He goes, I will take my hemorrhoid donut and I will leave. And then he leaves. And then it ends with some sort of like very, very Tennessee Williams-esque sort of framing. Why do people eat other people's potato chips? And then, you know, Will Forte is looking in the camera, and so is Blake Lively. And in the window outside, through the pane and through the shade, the blinds, is Sudeikis with his hemorrhoid donut. And they all look straight at the camera. And Will Forte goes, because they're hungry, Janelda, because they're hungry. And that's the end of the sketch. So, needless to say, it was a 12:50 sketch. It was, you know, because that's when they put all the weird stuff. It's 11:50 our time, but it's called the 12:50 sketch. And he kind of, you know, if it, the cowbell sketch was a 12:50 sketch. So, anyway, when it ended, I was like, what the hell was that? It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life. And it's gone on to be like one of my favorite sketches ever. And when Sudeikis is asked what his favorite sketch that he was ever in, he always says potato chip. It was written by Will Forte. It was written by Will Forte, which means it's going to be weird. But I failed to mention that a couple of mornings ago when we were talking about best SNL sketches. And I can't believe no one caught me on that and texted me and said, why the hell didn't you mention the potato chip sketch? So I had to make good on that. And if you've never seen it, Tom, you look it up on Hulu.
I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it.
It is so weird and so brilliant. And like it ends and you go, what the hell was that? And what are these characters? And this is NASA? When you see The Office, it was not. And I don't know. I know because I don't know how Will Forte's head works. I don't know how his mind works. Did you watch Last Man on Earth?
I did. I watched some of it.
Brilliant. Yeah. And so he's so insane. Did you see The Brother Solomon with him and Will and Will, no. Will Arnett? Fantastic. I love Will Forte. Well, and he's nuts.
And I love him. My favorite thing he's ever done was on Tim and Eric's show. He did this thing called Fortin with Will, where he's like a weird like children's TV show host, and he's showing kids how to make couch forts. And it's like the strangest thing.
Of course, it is. I never watched Tim and Eric. I'm not a big fan of Tim and Eric, so I never watched it.
I think you would really like just Will Forte.
Well, I like him in everything. The Falconer. Do you remember the Falconer? Come on now, the Falconer where everybody goes back in time and it's a bunch of Falconers. That's one of the great. That's another one that I didn't mention on the last time. But anyway, I had to mention potato chip sketch, and I got to say, frankly, I'm shocked that I was not berated by my listeners for not. Mentioning the potato. Did you eat one of my potato chips? It's fantastic. So anyway, I had to mention that. Let's get it. And by the way, that kind of fits into what we're talking about, because you could be really stoned while watching that and think it's the most brilliant thing you've ever seen in your life. And I don't know if Forte and his writing partner were stoned when they wrote it, but I wouldn't be surprised.
We'll put it past him.
And by the way, Blake Lively was great. She was so funny in that sketch. So, all right. We're talking stoner movies. What are your favorite stoner movies? We got a bunch of texts we'll get to in a minute, and I got a list here of some of the best stoner movies of all time, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
How you doing, man? Here's one that you wouldn't think of. How about Reefer Madness?
Yeah, well, I mean, Reefer Madness is a ridiculous movie. But I guess people would watch that stoned. Why not?
Well, it should be on Svengoolie.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not really a horror movie though, but that was a movie that was supposed to be, it was like a PSA.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually, back when that movie was made, they were trying to convince people that this is how you would behave if you smoked pot. Mm-hmm.
They turned it into a musical with what's her name? Veronica Mars.
Yeah. That would be the great Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
You know, we did the original Reefer Madness musical was written by a guy named Sean Abley, who was one of the founders of my theater company, the Factory Theater. And it ran for a bunch of years. That was kind of got the Factory Theater off of its on its feet. All right. Hey, Tom, thanks for the call, man. 312-981-7200. 724 area code says, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle is one of my faves. Yes, that is a classic stoner movie. 773 says, Heavy Metal. Yeah, Heavy Metal, the animated movie based on the magazine. A lot of weed blowing being done while you're watching that one. 815 area code says, it's not a stoner movie, but my favorite stoner in movies is Brad Pitt's role in True Romance, which we mentioned earlier. 479 area code says, Clerks! Clerks. Squat says, we used to get drunk and stoned while watching Where the Buffalo Roam, and we laughed our asses off. Great show, as always. Where the Buffalo Roam was Bill Murray, Peter Boyle. Where he's kind of playing Hunter S. Thompson in that. 815 area code says, Cheech and Chong's next movie is their best and hilarious when it's edited for TV because instead of carrying around a bag of weed, it's a bag of diamonds. Really? All right. All right, let's take a look at this, what they say online here. Dude, where's my car? The stonedest line is, wait a second, let's recap last night. We lost my car, we accepted stolen money from a transsexual stripper, and now some space nerds want to find something that we can't pronounce. I can't say it, Chester, but maybe we need to cut back on it. Think of where Dude, Where's My Car is a slightly less funny stoner forefather to The Hangover. Dude, Where's My Car is funnier than The Hangover.
Yeah.
The Hangover movies suck.
Yeah, I got nighthawked on the first one. I really love the first Hangover, but this movie is
terrible.
Dude, Where's My Car is amazing.
Dude, Where's My Car is much funnier than The Hangover.
Especially Sean William Scott.
Yeah, he's great.
That kid's crazy.
He was always going to be Stifler, though. That's the thing. Except instead of losing their best friend, Ashton Kutcher and Sean William Scott lose Kutcher's car and get the dumbest tattoos possible while tripping out in their wild night. What were their tattoos again? I totally forgot.
It was
sweet,
dude,
right?
And sweet.
Right,
okay. What does yours say? Dude, what does mine say? Sweet.
Yeah. Next year they mentioned Ted. I went in with really low expectations. The second one sucked. The second Ted sucked, but the first one is hilarious.
Made a ton of money, too.
Yeah. Seth MacFarlane's movie about, you know, the teddy bear childhood companion to Mark Wahlberg that actually is alive and voiced by Seth MacFarlane. Seth MacFarlane, director of Family Guy, creates the ultimate unrealistic stoner film featuring a profane, bong-hitting teddy bear, Ted. Best friend John Bennett, played by Mark Wahlberg, is continually dragged down by his derelict bear, which pisses off his girlfriend, Lori Collins, played by Mila Kunis. The interchange between the two Bostonian-accented characters is offensively hysterical. Let's see. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yes.
Is that the one you're going to pick of all the Kevin Smith movies? I mean, I guess, right?
I think that movie holds up better than you might think.
I think it's really funny. But let me tell you something, though. One of my favorite experiences at Bruin View ever, my friend Mike, when I told him, we were just a bunch of us, I did a play called Among the Dead, and in it I played a zombie killer. It was the best role I ever had, one of the most fun I've ever had on stage, because I was in a zombie play, and I got to kill zombies, although I always side with zombies when I watch zombie movies. For me, they're the protagonists. I'm always on the zombie side. I always feel bad when, But anyway, so I was in this play, and we had closed, and all of us were like, we wanted to reunite again like the following week because we had such a great time doing the play. And there were like 30 people in the play because we had tons of extra zombies. And full makeup, the person who did the makeup, the effects, blood, gore, all of it's fantastic. And I had a pole, what we called a pole saw. It was a long pole with a chainsaw on the end so I could kill zombies at long distances. And it was fantastic. Anyway, we all were like, hey, we got to go, let's meet up someplace. And we looked in the paper and we looked and we saw that Bruin View was showing the double feature of Jackass and Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And we were like, that's it. That's it. So I was telling my friend Mike, who was not in the play but is an actor, I was like, Mike, you have to come with us. We're all going to go see, we're going to Bruin View, and we're going to go see Jackass. And he's like, I don't want to see that crap. And he's like, I don't reality show crap. And I'm like, no, Mike, seriously, you have to come and see this movie. It's one of the funniest movies in the history of cinema. I mean, it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. He's like, shut up. You like all that reality crap. He wasn't really, he didn't know what Jackass was, but he knew it was sort of like a reality thing. And it was on to MTV. And those were two strikes against it for him. So he goes, all right, fine. I said, look, if we're going to go, and if you don't like it, I will pay your admission. I will give you your money back. I will refund you your money, and I will buy you a beer. And he's like, all right, fine. And he had a really negative attitude. So he's sitting about two seats away from me. We got a whole bunch of tables together, the whole cast of like Among the Dead and a couple of friends and stuff. We're all there. About 10 minutes into Jackass, he walks over to my seat. He leans over and he goes, this is the effing funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I said, yeah, I told you. I just loved it. And the point I'm trying to make, Tom, is that, you know, as funny as Jay and Silent Bob is, it's Jackass is a tough act to follow, man. It's act to follow. So I remember sitting in the theater going, oh, my God, I can't wait. Jay and Silent Bob. And when it came on and I wasn't laughing every 30 seconds like I was during Jackass, I was like, oh, man, this just isn't as good as I thought it was. But it is. It's just that it followed Jackass. You know what I mean? It's like the monkeys following Hendrix. That's sure. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, yeah, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But there's a lot of Kevin Smith movies. Like somebody mentioned Clerks. You know, that's Mallrats is a pot movie, right?
Yeah, it's, people, well, I mean, it's watched by people who smoke pot. They're not like about pot.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, don't they smoke pot? Jay and Silent Bob are potheads.
Well, yeah, but it's not like watching Up in Smoke where the whole bit
is
about pot. Jay and Silent Bob are the best.
You must be excited about the reboot.
Yeah.
But you can't call him Fat Boy anymore.
No.
Jay can't call him Fat Boy anymore.
No.
Because he's not fat anymore. Yeah, a heart attack will do that.
Couple of songbird Jesus freak drug dealers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right, we got a break here. We'll come back. I got more stoner movies to jump into. And if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Talk or text best stoner movies. And we'll get into it more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the Friday features are coming up, and we would love to hear from you during this. What are your favorite stoner movies? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got How High with Redman and Method Man, which is a terrible movie. Method Man and Redman parlayed their fame as blunt-smoking rappers into this awful but entertaining laugher about two smokers who go to Harvard and blaze the place after acing their college entrance exams with the help of a nerdy friend. How High is little on exposition, and rather than weed jokes, hot chicks who also love weed, and clowning dudes from various races who make you look goofy while indulging in weed. So there you go. All right. Let's see. Here's Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Morning, Nicholas. Yeah. How are you?
All right.
Hey, I don't know if these people were stoned when they designed these movies, but Arsenic and Old Lace and Harvey.
Oh, well, all right. If you want to go, those aren't necessarily movies that you watch when you're stoned.
Oh, no, they're perfect movies when you're wasted.
Is that right?
Especially with today's weed, forget about it.
Well, Arsenic and Old Lace is one of my favorite movies of all time because...
Oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely.
Yeah, because Cary Grant is one of my favorite people who ever lived. So I do love that movie. But that's... those are our little unusual choices, but we'll go with it.
Well, and you know, you can always throw in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World for those of us that are over the age of 55.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right, Robert, thanks.
All right, have a great Easter, care. Mate.
All right. Are interesting choices. Arsenic and Old Lace, Harvey, and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. All right. Okay, let's take a break, shall we? The news is coming up after this, and then more stoner movies. Text lines and phone lines are open. Stoner movies, 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6. Friday morning, yeah! So that means our regular Friday features will be coming up. We got You Big Dummy to kick it all off at 4 o'clock, and that's where we read real dumb news stories about real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. And we also have Straight Out of Context, our regular feature on Friday, and that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7 whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle. Jot the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Same thing for Nick D Show Spies. You listen to the station 24/7 whenever anybody mentions me at any time. You're the spy. We want to know about it. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then, of course, Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in for R&B and funky songs. All right. Tomorrow, Saturday, is April 20th, 420, and 420 has become Weed Day. We gave you the history of the Waldos and Weed Day, and so now we're talking about stoner movies. What are the best stoner movies? We got some lines open if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200, talk and text. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the texts. Dominic says, "Hey, Nick, here are my thoughts on stoner movies. As a stoner myself, I believe any movie could be for stoners, depending on how high they are. After a while, you get so comfy on the couch, I've even changed the channel, and it was an old Japanese black and white samurai movie. But here's the catch. It was on a Spanish channel, so I was glued."
I would definitely watch like Seven Samurai.
In Spanish?
In Spanish, just sure. For the experience.
Yeah. 815 area code shows a hobo with a shotgun. That movie should have been so much better than it was. You know what I mean? You got Rutger Hauer, man. Don't waste Rutger Hauer. Don't do that to me. Don't you dare do that to me. You know what movie Rutger Hauer was great in, except all of them? Except everyone, every movie that he's ever been in, he's been great?
Right.
God, what's the name of the Chuck Barris movie with Sam Rockwell? Clooney directed it.
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
He's so good in that.
Yeah,
Rutger Hauer. I mean, he's good in everything.
Yeah, they're all great in that.
Yeah, love that's it. A great movie. Oh, but I just for some reason I was like, I don't think when that movie came out, I think he hadn't done a movie in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw it, I was like, Rutger Hauer's in this because I love Rutger Hauer. Yeah, he was in it, but he was in a what a terrible Dario Argento movie. Did you see Dracula 3D?
Yeah.
Two of my favorite artists in cinema, Dario Argento and Rutger Hauer, and that was terrible.
Yeah, really really as bad as it gets.
Oh, so bad. I'm like, wait a minute, man. This is not the same guy who did Opera and Suspiria and Tenebrae. No, it's not. When's The Bird with the Crystal Plumage at Music Box? Is that this weekend?
It's not this weekend. It's coming up.
It would have been, you know what? It would have been convenient because tomorrow night I'm going to see Her Smell. And if it was the midnight show, because I know it's the midnight show at 35, they're showing it in 35 millimeter. Man, that would have been cool if it was. I would have just stayed at the Music Box all night.
I mean, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's rare.
Actually, you know, wait, it's next weekend.
Oh.
It's next weekend. It's Friday the 26th and April the 27th.
They're midnight. It's at midnight, right?
Yeah, they're midnight.
Oh, times. Man.
Phew. I'll be hitting one of those up at least.
Oh, come on, man. 224 area code says, it's not a stoner movie, but the movie I like to watch while stoned is Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Yeah, I can totally see that. I can see all the Python movies being stoner movies. Hey, by the way, the 40th anniversary of the release of Life of Brian was yesterday. Monty Python's Life of Brian, which is my favorite Python movie, was released 40 years ago yesterday. So if you want to feel really old, there you go. 262 area code says, how about Fast Times, Puff Puff Past, of course, Grandma's Boy, and there was that one with Method Man that I can't think of the name of, and I'm not stoned. We just talked about it. It's How High. Grandma's Boy, 773, Billy Bill in Portage Park says, Grandma's Boy, Days of Confused, and Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke. Grandma's Boy is a stoner movie?
It definitely is.
I mean, it's a piece of crap.
It is, but like they're constantly smoking weed throughout it, and it is kind of funny, I guess, if you're inebriated.
Yeah, I think it's necessary to get through that movie. Oh, that movie was brutal. Now we've got Billy Madison here on this list.
I could see that.
Adam Sandler is at his simple-minded best, playing Billy, an aimless, developmentally stunted 27-year-old rich kid who has to pass elementary, junior high, and high school in order to keep control of his dad's business from his smarmy nemesis. So there you go. It's especially funny after 5 bong rips. That's what they say here. It's not my scale. This is the end. Not a fan, man. I've gotten to the point where I have a pretty low tolerance of the Seth Rogen guys, of all those dudes. I mean, I still like 40-Year-Old Virgin, which is not really Seth Rogen. That's more, I mean, he's in it, but it's the Judd Apatow, all those guys who came out after that. But like that Christmas movie that they did was terrible.
The Night Before.
It was terrible. The Neighbors, both of those Neighbors movies were awful. I have a very low tolerance. This is the end. There were a few funny things. I thought Michael Cera was the funniest thing in that movie. And I automatically put up a barrier when Danny McBride's in a movie, because I hate Danny McBride. I don't think he's even remotely funny. I don't think he's funny at all. He's the opposite of funny. The only time I ever liked him in anything was in Pineapple Express, which is a major stoner movie. But I liked him in, I thought his like 2 scenes in Pineapple Express were pretty funny, but I can't stand that guy. I've never once voluntarily laughed at anything he did. Even Eastbound and Down. Eastbound and Down, that's probably the funniest thing he's ever been a part of, but I still don't find him funny. And as soon as I see his name in the credits, and the guy defecated all over Halloween. So right there, he needs a smack.
Not a fan of the Halloween.
Oh, God. I hated it. That was awful. Yeah. So, all right. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Nick, how you doing, my man?
All right.
Okay, we're going to start off with Half-Baked.
Yeah, Half-Baked is, you know, way up high on the list, no pun intended.
The most epic way to quit your job ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go with you. Have you ever seen Meet the Feebles?
Oh, sure. Meet the Feebles? Yeah. You know who directed that?
Yes, that is Peter Jackson.
Yeah, Peter Jackson
did a lot. Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Meet the Feebles. Yeah. And there was one more he did.
What was the third one? Because the Meet the Feebles was the puppet one.
Dead Alive is a zombie.
There was another one. There was another one that he did.
Bad Taste.
Bad Taste. That's right.
I think Bad Taste. Yeah. Because that was also a zombie one too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that one. Let's see. Godzilla versus Megalon. Come on, man. Yeah. Come on. That was like the ultimate tag team battle royale. Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah.
And by the way, Patrick, have you seen the new one-sheet poster for Godzilla King of Monsters?
Actually, no, but I was just at Woodridge to see Shazam, and out in the lobby, they had this enormous stand-up, each letter spelling out Godzilla with a scene of Godzilla fighting Ghidorah and what's her, God dang it, Madison, the girl that plays Madison, I always forget it. Well, Millie Bobby Brown,
just a
tiny little silhouette watching him. The thing stands about maybe 4.5, almost 5 feet tall.
That's fantastic.
And there's no way it's going to fit in my apartment.
tempted to just stick it under your coat and leave?
Well, I asked them if I could have it. They're like, well, we'll have to wait until after the movie's played, and then maybe, you know, we'll consider. But I'm like, well, that just got nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Somehow it won. Speaking of which, have you seen the most recent YouTube trailer?
The most recent Godzilla trailer?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a nod to the Giant Claw.
Mm.
Remember the movie The Giant Claw?
Yeah.
there's a scene where a pilot ejects and goes backwards into Rodan's mouth.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll tell you, that's going to be the greatest movie ever made. I'm telling you right now.
Oh, good Lord.
It's so good.
IMAX only. Oh, I got a couple more before you go. And it just slipped my mind. I'm getting seen out. Oh, I used to watch Jurassic Park a lot when I was stoned. And, of course, has anyone mentioned Pink Floyd, The Wall?
Yes, that was one. The first call we got this morning from a listener was for Pink Floyd, The Wall. That was the first call we got.
All right, let's take The Wall out of it. Have you ever watched I'm sure you have. Not Pulse, but Delicate Sound of Thunder.
Of course.
Yeah, the live video.
Yeah.
When he plays Comfortably Numb.
Yeah.
That extended solo and the way that the disco ball just opens up. And good God. I don't smoke anymore, but when I smoked, God, that was just, that was mesmerizing. But hey.
All right, Patrick.
Thanks for taking the call, brother.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Super High Me. Doug Benson. Did you ever watch? He was so good. I used to love At Midnight. I loved At Midnight. Great showcase for really funny comedians. And I'm a Hardwick fan. I'm a Hardwick fan. And Doug Benson, high every time he was on the show, like completely, unbelievably high. And he had a show on Comedy Central for a little while. It was only 15 minutes long, and it was called High Court. And it was like a Judge Judy thing. They were real cases that were going to be settled on this show. And he was high all the time. He would blow weed in the office in the back, and then come out and like actually try be the judge. And they had a different bailiff every night. So they'd have a different comedian be a bailiff every night, and then they would hear the case. They would go in the back, and they would do a bunch of bong rips, and then they would come back, and he would give his summation. And it didn't last very long. I thought it was hilarious. It was only 15 minutes long. So it should have been on. I guess it should have been on Adult Swim. That's the other thing. Adult Swim. The shows are so short, so that people can get high. You know, so that they're high the entire show, like the entire. You're gonna get Eric Andre. You're gonna watch him. You can watch him high. You know, all of those shows. Metalopolis.
Metalocalypse.
Metalocalypse. Fantastic.
So good.
Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, what can you say about the Aqua Teen Hunger Force that hasn't already been said?
I've got like 8 seasons of that on DVD.
It's the best. Who's your favorite?
Definitely Frylock.
Oh yeah, really?
I love Frylock. I think he's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm a Shake guy.
Master Shake.
Yeah, I'm a Shake guy.
Did you ever see the episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast where they first introduced them?
No.
Oh, it was very. They were voiced. They did they were voiced by the Moonanites instead.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's Master Shake comes in and he's just like Master Shake is my name and thirst is what I tame in the Moonanite's voice.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. Why am I blanking? I'm so bad now. Why am I blanking on their neighbor's name?
Carl?
Carl, yeah. Carl was my favorite non-Hunger Force guy. Yeah. Carl was unbelievable. But I remember vividly seeing the movie in a theater with people who had no idea what the hell was going on.
Oh, yeah. No.
Why they showed up to it, I don't know. I mean, the movie was out for a week. I mean, it tanked. And I mean, everybody knew that. But my wife and my wife and I went. We were both, like, massive fans. We were laughing our asses off. And people were kind of looking at us like, what is... And the ending and the way it ends?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Tina Fey, man. God, that was funny. I love those guys. Now, there, you want to talk about high. There's a stoner movie. Get the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie. Oh, my God. So, all right, here's your weather forecast. Lakeshore flood advisory in effect through 1 a.m. on Saturday. Cloudy, early with a chance of few light morning showers. Cool, high of 52, wind chills in the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, warmer, high of 64. We'll get down to a low of the mid-40s. For Easter, Sunday, partly cloudy, windy, warm temperatures in the mid-70s and down to a low of 50. For Monday, chance of morning showers. Better chance of rain in the afternoon with thunderstorms possible. Cold front in the area could produce large temperature differences north to south. And then on Tuesday, cooler with highs in the upper 50s. Currently 42 degrees at O'Hare, 42 at Midway, 40 at the lake front. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the conversation about stoner movies right here on 720 WGN.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice.
Yeah. I like Steve Miller, but he's like one of the worst lyricists in the history of rock and roll. He writes some of the dumbest songs of all time.
I got to give it up for that line, though. Some people call me Maurice.
Yeah.
You don't even know everybody that. Knows it.
But it's funny is he does have he's written some of the stupidest lyrics of all time. And my favorite stupid rhyme is in Take the Money and Run, which is they went down to El Paso and ran into a great big hasso. Attempting to rhyme hassle with passo.
Love it.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Wrapping up the conversation here about stoner movies. And after 4 o'clock, all the regular Friday features on the Nick DiGilio Show will come too. So what do we got? Mention another Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Super Troopers. What about Don't Be a Menace to South Central While You're Drinking Your Juice in the Hood? Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is listed here as a great stoner movie. I don't know if that's just you feel like you're stoned when you're watching that movie. PCU, which is I think a pretty funny movie. PCU. They mentioned Pineapple Express, which is absolutely. We got a couple of texts here. 708 area code said Super Troopers. 630 area code says Pineapple Express. I hated Super Troopers 2, though.
Yeah, Super Troopers 2, I feel really bad about.
Yeah. I think the first one's funny, but the second one was bad. 815 area code says Rocky and Bullwinkle. Watch Rocky and Bullwinkle High. Yeah, I guess I could see that.
What are the names of the two villains? It's like Boris
and Natasha.
Boris and Natasha.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's legendary stuff. 847 area code says, I quit my job half-baked styled after the boss and I had it out. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. Wow, okay. And that's the one thing that everybody takes away from that movie, is that scene. That's the, you know, I mean, because I think half-baked it's fine. You know, it's got some, you know, it's got some laughs in it. But that scene, everybody talks about that. That's the big takeaway from that movie. Paul says, Dawn of the Dead. Have a great day, dude. Could you imagine watching Dawn of the Dead high?
I mean, kind of.
Jeez.
That'd be intense.
Yeah.
That'd be intense.
All right. Next on the list, come on, man, The Big Lebowski.
I Am the Walrus.
Oh, man. I love that movie. And I mean, Jeff Bridges is my favorite actor of all time, and he's so great in it. He's so funny. Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. Did you watch the Netflix, the two series?
I liked, was it Last Day of Camp and then First Day of Camp?
There were ones that took place in the 80s, and there was one in the 90s.
Yeah, the one where it's the first day of camp is great. The one after that did not enjoy very much. Yeah. Right. A valiant effort, but not as good.
Grandma's Boy comes up again. Mallrats. Well, he's got two movies on this list. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
And saved then NPH's career.
And then finally, we get this one.
Let me tell you this. The older you do get, the more rules are going to try to get you to follow. You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
And that's the line that they chose in this article to pull from as the stonedest line. Classic comedy, classic school flick, and most assuredly a classic stoner movie. The last day of school in 1976 means hazing, hot girls, beer drinking, lots of weed smoking. Sometimes we forget we ever graduated. Scary Movie is pretty high on this list. I guess. I don't know.
I would suggest getting high before you watch again, because that time has not been kind to those pop culture references.
Yeah. Well, Scary Movie I thought was okay. The rest of them I thought all sucked. thought they all sucked after that. Up in Smoke. I mean, this is this. I didn't know your name was Alex, man. Just, you know, I mean, come on. The first 20 minutes of Up in Smoke is complete genius. Before, like, the plot kicks in, like, when they first meet. And I don't know how they did it. I have vodka, man, when they're in the courtroom. I don't know how they did it, but I don't know if they were high when they made the movie. If they were, I mean, how did they make a movie? Some people would argue that Up in Smoke really isn't a movie. It's because it's, you know, it's it barely qualifies as a film. But they captured what it's like to be high so perfectly that you're like, well, were they sober? Were they not stoned and knew how to act it? Or somehow everybody on the set was blazing and they just were like, whatever, man.
I think that Tommy Chong and Cheech Marin were way smart and knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
I sincerely believe that.
Up in Smoke is their best movie. I mean, I've mentioned this before. When I was in high school, there were three kinds of movies to see during my high school years. There were three kinds of movies for teenagers to see. There were the slasher movies that were usually named after a holiday. There were the teen sex comedies, like your Porky's and your Private School and all that stuff. And there were Cheech and Chong movies. Those were the three movies that were released. We got a Cheech and Chong movie like every 6 months. And I like Next Movie. I love Nice Dreams. I think Nice Dreams is hilarious. Things Are Tough All Over. Corsican Brothers, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. Still Smoking is pretty funny. But Up in Smoke, man, you know, and first of all, Strother Martin. The one of my favorite scenes in the history of movies is Strother Martin's scene at the beginning of Up in Smoke. You get a job before sundown or we're shipping you off to the military school with the damn Finkelstein crap kid. Son of a bitch. That's why, I mean, he's only in one scene and they cast Strother Martin as Tommy Chong's dad. I mean, who thought they had to be high when they were like, who you want to play your dad? Man, Strother Martin. Oh, that's believable. Now you listen to me when I'm talking to you. Oh my God, I think he's the Antichrist. Up in Smoke, baby. All right. There you go. Stoner movies. Enjoy them tomorrow on 420. We'll take a break. News is up next, then our regular features will begin after that.
Dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no. You big dummy. You dummy.
All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Friday. That means our regular Friday features are beginning. We start with You Big Dummy. This is when we read real news stories about real people who do real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom and I will vote, and then you guys can call in, and the first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. Let's get going. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy one. A woman wanted by police is behind bars after revealing her whereabouts in an online spat with the force's Facebook page. Chloe Jones, 23, of Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, was added to the Greene County Sheriff's Office top 10 wanted list last month after she failed to appear in court in connection with an assault charge. After spotting herself on the list in a Facebook post as officers hunted her, Jones commented, "Do you guys do pickup or delivery?" Her message was followed by four crying with laughter emojis. Jones then became embroiled in an argument in the comment section over why she hadn't shown up in court in the first place, defending herself against Facebook users who accused her of immaturity. There's nothing funny about seeing yourself on wanted poster. It's embarrassing, one person wrote. Turn yourself in. Be responsible. It's not too late to turn your life around. Jones replied to the public page that she hadn't made it to court because she had been in Ruby Memorial Hospital in Morgantown, West Virginia at the time. The fugitive added that she posted her initial comment from there. Jones was then arrested at a residence in Morgantown earlier this week.
I'm not Kenyan. You're a big dummy. You're a bigger dummy than my dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy number two. A Wisconsin man and his mother face multiple charges after an incident at a local Walmart that involved nudity, theft, and karate. Eau Claire officers responded to the big box store just before 8:30 p.m. Wednesday after getting a call about a woman and her dog stealing items from the store. When officers arrived at the Walmart, they found 46-year-old Lisa Smith screaming at the entrance and trying to catch her dog, Bo, police say. The woman's son, 25-year-old Benny Van, was also allegedly contributing to the chaos. The police said in a news release that said, in trying to figure out what happened, officers learned Smith had come into the Walmart and unleashed her dog, Bo. While Bo ran up to customers, Smith erratically started pulling apart store displays and placing them in her cart. She was asked to leave by staff and left the store to perform karate moves in the parking lot. In the meantime, Bo got a box of Jiffy cornbread muffin mix and tried to leave the store. But what? Smith was arrested and fought with officers. She also attempted to kick out the window of the squad car. While this was occurring, Van had made his way to the back of the store and removed all of his clothing, exposing himself to other customers. Van retrieved new clothing from the racks, but did not attempt to purchase these items. When officers approached Van, he refused to stop and attempted to run over an officer with his scooter. Officers physically stopped the scooter and arrested Van. Smith charges of disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and misdemeanor bail jumping. Her son was arrested for lewd and lascivious behavior, disorderly conduct, and retail theft. Police managed to catch Bo and brought him to the Humane Association. The dog was not charged. Oh, God. But he took cornbread mix. He took a box of cornbread mix.
Dummy! Dummy!
Get lost, dummy!
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Three! An Indiana man. I know this one. I've heard this. The late night dudes have had a field day with this story. The late night TV hosts. An Indiana man is suing his parents for getting rid of his vast pornography collection, which he estimates is worth $29,000. The 40-year-old man last week filed a suit in federal court in Michigan, where he moved in with his parents in 2016 following a divorce. God, he said. I wonder why he got divorced. Do you think there might be a reason why he got divorced? You think $29,000 worth of porn might be a reason? He says that when he moved out 10 months later, they delivered his things to his new home in Muncie, Indiana, but that his 12 boxes of pornographic films and magazines were missing. His parents admit they dumped the porn, which included titles. Such titles as Frisky Business and Big Bad Grannies. The man filed a complaint with police, but the Ottawa County prosecutor declined to press charges. The lawsuit includes an email excerpt from the man's father, who told his son, I did you a big favor by getting rid of all that stuff. The man is seeking triple financial damages of roughly $87,000.
Game, you were just a plain dummy, but after the night, you'd be a broke dummy.
You think Frisky Business is on Netflix? I'd like to see that one. Big Bad Grannies.
Soul to the dummy with the black mustache.
Dummy number four. Dummy number four. Come on. Amid the robbers, thieves, burglars, and other crooks who faced Miami-Dade Circuit Court Judge Renatha Francis Tuesday morning, Gianni Sosa's crime stood out. The 18-year-old Southridge Senior High School student had spent the night in the lockup for performing a famous wrestling move known as the RKO on a life-size plastic alligator in an artificial tropical pond at the Kendall Mall. He had a friend record his antics and posted it on social media himself. Shoppers in the video appear to be amused. Management at the Falls, where the shops are built around lush tropical displays, were not. Sosa was charged with criminal mischief, a potential felony, because the Miami-Dade police report claims that the plastic gator suffered about $3,690 in damage, well above the 1,000 misdemeanor cutoff. In the video, the gator appears undamaged aside from being wet and left floating upside down. Prosecutors admitted in the court that the estimate may be excessive. Sosa's court appearance was actually his second in less than a week. An attempt to put the same RKO wrestling maneuver, popularized by WWE pro wrestler Randy Orton, on Sosa's principal at Southridge, also captured on cell phone video, landed the teen before the same judge last week. Rolling her eyes in disbelief, Francis looked at Sosa and said, "Oh, you're back." To be fair, the RKO is a really cool move. Now, you've seen the videos online where they insert Randy Orton RKOing everything. Outstanding.
Watch out, watch out, watch out!
Yeah, exactly. Oh, good Lord, it's Jim Ross.
What kind of life do you think it is being the father of a young dummy?
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy five, dummy. After a knee injury, Klaus Jorstad of Alta, Norway, invested in a Marius stool from IKEA to sit on while he showered. But that plan backfired big time. While sitting on the chair during a recent rinse, one of Jorstad's testicles got stuck in a hole in the seat, and when the hot water caused them to expand... Sitting there and noticing the accident, I bent down to see what happened. I realized the little nutter got stuck, he told the Daily Mail. He sat there so long, in fact, that the water turned cold. However, Jorstad thinks the freezing water is actually a saving grace. You see, the temperature drop caused the testicle to shrink again, which allowed him to safely free the little guy. But after the incident, he decided to warn others about the experience by taking to Facebook and alerting IKEA in a post that has since gone viral. IKEA's response? Hey, Klaus, we recommend that you take the stool out of the shower or that you sit on it in the right uniform and in the right setting, a staffer posted in Facebook. If you choose to keep it in the shower, make sure that you're well-dressed for your next sea excursion. So Jorstad did what he should have done from the beginning. He covered the stool with a washcloth, and the problem was solved.
And for every dummy, there's a dummy. And for every dummy, there's a dummy.
That one was so important, Fred had to say it twice. All right, we have to break here for weather and some commercials. And then when we come back, we have to vote. And after I do the recap, first person through at 312-981 will be the deciding vote, or not the deciding vote, but the third vote, which might be the deciding vote, on who is Dummy of the Week. That's all coming up right after we take a break. Here is your weather from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. For today, a lakeshore flood advisory is in effect through 1 a.m. on Saturday. Cloudy early with a chance of a few light morning showers. It'll be cool with a high of 52. Wind chills in the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and warmer, high of 64. At night, we'll get down to a mid-40s for low. For Easter Sunday, partly cloudy, windy, warm temperatures, high in the mid-70s, down to a low at night of 50. Monday, a chance of morning showers, better chance of rain in the afternoon, and thunderstorms are possible. The cold front in the area could produce large temperature differences from north to south. And then for Tuesday, cooler, with a high in the upper 50s, a low of 47. It is currently 42 degrees at O'Hare, 42 at Midway, 40 at the lakefront. Okay, we're going to break here, and when we come back, we'll vote on who is the biggest dummy right here on WGN. Hey, you want to see Tom Skilling live in concert? Come on out to WGN-TV's White Sox Weather Day on May 14th, then watch the Sox play the Indians. Tickets available at whitesox.com/WGN. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And all of our regular features have begun for our Friday morning, and we will end it with Fly Jams Friday. Luscious Hushes is going to be at the wheel, so get your requests in now. Anything funky, anything R&B, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. But we have to do our voting for You Big Dummy. All right. So we got to do our voting right here, and it's a strong week. It's a strong, dumb week. So here's the recap, and again, first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. All right, we got the dummy fugitive who revealed her whereabouts by taunting the police on Facebook. We have the Indiana mother and son dummies who terrorized a Walmart with their dog. We have the dummy who sued his parents over throwing out his porn collection. We have the dummy teen who RKO'd a fake alligator and tried to RKO his principal. We have the dummy who got his testicle trapped in an IKEA stool. This is a strong week of dummies. These people are all dumb. All right. Tom, what's your thought process here?
All right. I initially wanted to give it to the girl who gave away her location to police on Facebook.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to go with the guy who RKO'd a plastic alligator in a mall after he already tried to RKO his principal.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I just don't know why you would try to commit the same crime twice.
And film it.
And film it.
Yeah.
And just give it away to everybody. It's insane.
I saw the footage of the alligator. The RKOing.
It's funny.
It's absolutely hilarious.
Like, hats off to that kid.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely hilarious. Yeah, that's strong. You know, the guy who sued his parents for throwing out his porn collection is also kind of a special one that I thought was very, very funny. And it's hard for me to believe that a guy would have $29,000 worth of porn. Does he not have the internet? I mean, you know, you don't have to pay $29,000 for...
No.
Just, I mean...
I mean, there are hot singles in your area.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what they're all telling me.
I also have to say that the story about the Indiana Walmart is fantastic.
I mean, it's peak. That's peak Walmart.
I mean, it's fantastic. And the dog named Bo who steals the cornbread mix? And then the mother doing karate in the parking lot? And the son naked, running around naked and then putting on clothes and not paying for them?
It's beautiful.
That's Walmart, baby. That's America. Yeah. So we're gonna get a third vote here, but we already have a winner because I'm going with the RKO.
Oh
kid.
Yeah.
Because that footage is unbelievably funny.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan. I'm a big wrestling fan.
Exactly.
And I love Randy Orton's finishing move. It's fantastic. I mean, it's. You know, it's a DDT. It's gone by 900 different names, mm-hmm. but his version of it is the RKO.
Love the RKO.
And it's also because there's these viral videos that have gone around where Randy Orton comes in and pile drives. He RKOs somebody, and you got Big JR's. Oh my God, he's broken in half. You know that whole thing. So we got it goes to the dummy team with the RKO and the alligator and the principal. But let's have Bob vote. Bob, who would you vote for in this situation?
Well, I feel like it's, a moot point at this time, but my vote actually would be what my mother always told me. If you ever get your testicles in a bind, it's your own fault. And
so you'd go with the guy from Norway who got his testicles stuck in the stool.
Yeah, and it kind of comes from, sad to say, personal experience. When I was like 12, I fell out of a tree onto a barbed wire fence.
Oh, that's dope. Thinking, jeez, good Lord.
So I'm thinking, you know,
yeah.
I've got some...
Yeah. All right. Okay, Bob. Thanks for sharing. I'm glad everybody's having breakfast right now, if you enjoyed that. Every guy, when he told that story, fell off a tree onto a barbed wire fence, just went, oh!
Yeah. Well, the worst part is that I'm having grape nuts.
Oh, wait a minute, man. Hold on.
All right.
Got my big cup of Henny Youngman juice.
You are drinking your Henny Youngman juice, young man. I remember, you ever see Officer and a Gentleman?
Of course.
Okay. That has one of the most effective nut shots in movie history. When Louis Gossett just nails gear when they're having the, they're having their little martial arts fight. Every single time I see the movie, it's like, oh my God. And of course, you know, like every episode of Jackass, there's like 50 of those.
Well, yeah. That's like, that's the main appeal.
Exactly. That's their favorite hobby. Hitting each other in the testicles with whatever they find. All right. Yeah. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight. Out of context, context, context. 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 What's up? Tell them where you're from. Straight out of context, 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 context. We got time for a couple. A few before we hit the news, and this is straight out of context. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, and you should, because it's the best radio station in the world. I listen 24/7 whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context, sounds a little dirty, a little double entendre-like, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play them back every Friday. All right, Tom, what do we got?
All right, first off, we got Lou Manfredini caught by Brian.
You haven't pulled that unit out yet. I've got some tips.
He's so helpful. He's such a handy guy.
He is, man. He is. He is. And again, I always like to remind that our old friend Esmeralda Leon, every time Lou Manfredini was on Straight Out of Context, she would laugh, and she would be laughing her butt off right now at that one. That's strong. Okay, next.
All right, this one's Steve Bertrand caught by Kelly in Elgin.
I just feel good about putting it all in there.
You know, one of the things that I love about this this segment that we do is it really shows what kind of minds my listeners have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, did you hear that? That sounded dirty. I love that. That's one of my favorite elements of this segment. So, okay, what's next?
All right, next the Queen. Or sorry, no, we got another Manfredini here.
Oh,
he's a classic. He got ripped apart this week.
Why would you stick your nose in that?
Who sent that one?
That was Lake Geneva Dan.
Lake Geneva Dan, thank you, Lou Manfredini. All right, let's hear another one here.
All right, Wendy Snyder, as always, of course, every week.
I would always volunteer to do everyone.
She's a sharer, you know?
Yeah. Who sent that one?
So that one is coming from Joel.
Joel. All right. All right. One more before we break.
All right. Next one. Tom from Bartlett. And of course, it's you.
Big guy's sausage. Oh. Come on now. All right. All right. All right. We were talking about Italian beef, right? Wasn't that when we were talking about Italian beef?
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll have more because we have the break for commercial. We got the news. And then after the news, more Straight Out of Context. Then we'll jump into Nick D Show Spies and Fly Jam Friday. All right. News is after this. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context, context. What's up? Tell them where you're from. Straight out of context, 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 context. Yeah, that's right, everybody. Welcome back. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday morning. Yeah, Friday, baby. And so that means our regular Friday features are happening. We'll be having Fly Jams Friday. Viggity, viggity, Vic, verified double V. We'll be running around like a lunatic in the newsroom. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky, and of course, Luscious Hushes is your DJ this morning.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
That's right. Get your requests in Fly Jams Friday at 312-981-7200. All right. We are back with our regular features here, and we're in the middle of Straight Outta Context. Again, this is where you listen to this radio station 24-7, and whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, let's continue, Tom.
All right, got this good one from Wild Bill.
Chubby Wiener.
you knew.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when you're talking about hot dogs and beefs, they're bound to
happen.
But didn't we say something though yesterday? Didn't I say something like this whole segment is going to be
part eventually.
Of the yeah.
Yeah.
Cuz I said wiener like 900 times, you know, during the thing. So, it was inevitable that a lot of those choices would be coming from that segment.
Yes, sir.
All right. What's next?
All right. Next is Scott from Carpentersville.
I like colored balls.
Was that Roe?
Yeah, here, I'll play that a little bit again.
I like colored balls.
It's hard to hear over...
I got it over Anna going... Yeah,
shouting about something.
All right. Okay, there you go, Ro. All right, who's next?
All right, next, Fox Valley Mike caught Wendy here.
If someone wants to see me naked, I'd be flattered.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, all right. Jeez. What brought that on?
I think you know what. Just to give it some context, I think they were talking about cameras in Airbnbs.
Oh, okay.
And it's like you know you can't put a camera in the bedroom or the bathroom.
Right. Right. Okay.
All that kind of stuff. All right. So this one's coming to us from Linda.
How's your butt?
Of course, that was Steve Cochran.
Yes, sir.
How's your butt?
Yep.
I don't even know.
Happened to it.
Something happened to whose butt was he asking about?
I think they were talking about a guy who wanted to bike Route 66.
Oh.
Like not a motorcycle, but like an actual bike, like a bicycle.
Oh, so he was asking that would be hard on your butt.
Yeah, hard on your keister.
Yeah. Okay. Hard on your keister, that was my radio name in college. Yeah! All right. What's next?
All right. Next one is from John in my favorite named city in Indiana, Terre Haute.
Terre Haute.
One of my favorite names for a city.
Who are we listening to?
And this is going to be Wendy.
Wendy again.
$1 million, you go up and down. No dangling.
No dangling.
That's good. That's good. All right. Who's next?
All right. Here is Mary Sandberg got caught by Pat McHenry.
Anything you got to stick your hand up in is not a good idea.
Oh, man.
Poor Mary. Sometimes she has the worst ones.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's uncomfortable. That's just plain uncomfortable.
And here we go. Actually, back to back, Mary, with a little guest host from Steve Cochran.
How many pumps are you taking?
Maybe 20 or 30.
Or sorry, that's Grzanich.
That was Grzanich, yeah. All right.
And then finally, this one I found. That was our last listener submitted one. But as I was listening back to these, I found this little gem.
Again, if I could be strapped down where I wouldn't fall off of it.
Wendy. Wendy provides so much material for this segment. All right, keep listening 24-7, everybody. Whenever anybody says something that sounds a little dirty, jot it all down. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We'll play them back again next Friday. All right, how about this?
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like hey!
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies,
like us.
Yeah, that's right. Our next Friday feature is Nick D Show Spies. That's when you become a spy. Listen 24-7 to this radio station, to everybody on it. Whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, what do we got?
All right, just one spy this week, but a very nice one. It was a listener, a very loyal listener, Jasmine, calling in and looking for you.
Excellent, yeah.
And while I'm on real quick, tell Nick I say hi.
I will. He's hearing you right now. Jasmine says hi, Nick.
Okay, there you go, Jasmine.
She's so sweet.
She is. She's adorable. And she listens to late night radio. She's a kid and she listens to late night radio, which is I can identify with because that's what I did when I was a kid. Had the radio on all night long. Listened to all of the late night guys. You got your Clark Webbers. I used to listen to Clark Webber, Steve King alone, mm-hmm. Steve and Johnny, Eddie Schwartz, all those guys. Late night, overnight radio. Had my radio on and all night long. To this radio, other radio station, but you know, 99% of the time to this radio station. So, which is why it's so unbelievable that I have that overnight shift on this radio station.
It's wonderful.
It's crazy.
I used to listen to my dad used to tape John Peel shows,
mm-hmm.
and he kept a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And I burned them onto a CD, and I would just listen to the same ones over and over again when I couldn't sleep.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So shall we get funky?
I think it's time.
All right.
On the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jam's Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Yeah. That's right. The late, great Johnny Kemp, everybody. With one of my favorite fly jams, maybe the flyest of all fly jams. Just got paid. It's Friday night. It is Friday, so that means it's Fly Jams Friday. We got Viggity Viggity Vic, Verified Double V. Just saw him in the newsroom running around like a lunatic, because that's what happens to him every Friday morning. I am now Wiki Wiki Nicky, and we, of course, have DJ Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
That's right. That's right. And he is taking the requests. So get your requests for fly jams. Anything funky, anything R&B-like, anything that falls under the category of fly. We would love to hear from you. The phone lines are open for your requests. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for any fly jam. All right, do we have requests backed up?
Oh, yeah. We've got plenty coming
in. Okay.
Right now, we're hearing from Sam. He wanted to hear a little Cloud Nine by The Temptations.
Oh.
Childhood part of my life wasn't very pretty. See, I was born and raised in the slums of the city. It was a one-room shack that slept in another chair beside me. We hardly had enough food or room to sleep. It was hard time. Needed something to eat, my trouble man.
Yeah. That's fly.
Especially The Temptations.
Yeah, you can't get much flyer than The Temptations. And that's a song. We don't get a lot of requests for that one. We get a lot of requests for Temptation songs. But that one, Cloud Nine, it's a great song. We've had it, obviously, we've had it played on Fly Jams Friday in the past, but it's not a frequent request, that Temptation song. So there you go. Let's do one more before we break.
All right, for sure. This is If I Were Your Woman by Gladys Knight and the Pips, coming to us from Rob.
You'd have no other woman. You'd be weak as a lamb if you had the strength to walk out that door. My love would overrule my sense, and I'd call you back for more. If I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
and you were my man.
Yeah, there you go. A little call and response there from Gladys. All right, nice Fly Jam so far. It's Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. DJ Luscious Hushes is spinning the tunes. We'll continue being funky and R&B-like and fly. After we break here, we got some weather and a couple of commercials, and then we'll be back for more Fly Jams. Get your requests in at 312-981-7200. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center for today, there's a lakeshore flood advisory in effect through 1 a.m. on Saturday. Cloudy early with a chance of few light morning showers. It'll be cool with a high of 52. Wind chills in the 30s, though. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, warmer, high of 64. And tomorrow night will be low in the mid-40s for low. For Easter Sunday, partly cloudy, windy, warm temperatures in the mid-70s and a low of 50. Or Monday, chance of morning showers. A better chance of rain in the afternoon with thunderstorms possible. A cold front in an area could produce large temperature differences between the north and the south. And for Tuesday, cooler, high temps in the upper 50s, and low will be in about 47 degrees. Currently, it's 42 degrees at O'Hare. It's 42 at Midway, 40 at the lakefront right here on 720 WGN. All right, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, more Fly Jams, and Fly Jams Friday continues. 312-981-7200 for your Fly Jam requests. Did Dan Hedaya request this?
No, that was Jambone Johnny.
Jambone Johnny.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of my favorites, and I always makes me think of Blood Simple.
Yeah, that's why I asked if Dan Hedaya requested it. Maybe Francis McDormand wanted to hear it. Yeah, no, and that's the second Coen Brothers song cue that we've used this week.
What was the other one?
Inside Lewin.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. Yeah. Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah.
That's so good.
That's the best. That movie, by the way, is great.
Yeah, I was weeping at the end.
No, it is Oscar Isaac. Everybody is so good at it, man. Carrie Mulligan is given some of the best dialogue that she's ever had to utter. I love that movie. I really do.
Watch it all the time.
The one movie that to me is the most underrated Coen Brothers movie of all time, is a movie that I love. My favorite Coen Brothers movie is Barton Fink. That's my favorite. But like right underneath Barton Fink is, in my opinion, is A Serious Man, which is a great, great movie and very Barton Fink-like. It has that same sort of weird, sort of dark tone to it. It's got a crazy ending. But I love that movie.
It's spectacular.
And nobody ever talks about it. You know, when you're talking Coen Brothers, it's always left off the list. So... anyway, all right, it's Fly Jams Friday. Yeah, man, Fly Jams Friday, yeah! Get your requests in, 312-981-7200. Steve Grzanich is coming up with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, Luscious Hushes, let's get back to it. We got more requests, right?
Oh, yeah, we got tons.
All right, here we go.
This is Dino requesting Starguard. Which way is up?
From a very funny Richard Pryor movie, Which Way Is Up, in which he plays three different roles. And it's a very funny movie. Richard Pryor's brilliance doing stand-up and, you know, the force of nature that he was on stage was never, ever really captured by the movies that he did. Like, how great and how funny and how brilliant Richard Pryor was never really captured. It was captured in Blue Collar. That's the only movie that he ever made where you could see what an astonishing performer he was. And Blue Collar, Paul Schrader, an amazing movie with Richard Pryor's best film performance. But Which Way Is Up Came pretty close. Which Way Is Up is a very, very funny movie. And that is a great song. That and you get to hear it a couple of times during the movie. So, all right. Who else who's getting funkified?
All right. Next is Steve with Got to Get You Into My Life by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Okay. My favorite Beatles covers. Yeah. We very rarely have a Fly Jams Friday where Earth, Wind, and Fire is not represented. And that, of course, makes sense because they're the greatest. So, hey, speaking of Fly, the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond tomorrow night, Morris Day and the Time and Sheila E. are playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I just saw it on Dean's weekend list on the TV there. Morris Day and the Time and Sheila E. You know, I literally ran into Morris Day.
Yeah,
when we were across the river in the Trib Building, they would sometimes do concerts in Pioneer Court in the summer. They would block it off and do concerts, and so the Time did a concert, mm-hmm. and his green room. They let him use the office. They let him use the green room in the Time used the green room in our building. On the first floor, back when we had the first... Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was walking down the hallway to go to the can, and I literally bumped into Morris Day.
Morris Day and the Time.
Yeah. I love those guys. I love those guys. I bumped into Morris Day, and he's I'm a little dude. He's littler than me. Morris Day is a little...
small guy.
Skinny dude, too. But, all right. Let's do a couple more.
All right. This one's coming to us from Bennett, the Uh-oh. Business of Funk.
Oh. The finest voice actor in America, ladies and gentlemen. All right, what did he request?
Right, he requested Rose Royce, Make It With You.
Oh, yeah. Bennett, the business of funk. You always count on him for something funky on a Friday morning. Okay. All right, Luscious Hushes, just one more. Let's close it out. Friday, Fly Jams Friday.
All right, this one was because of our conversation that we were having all day. This one's in honor of tomorrow coming to us from Scott. It's a little Afro Man.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high.
There you go.
I can't tell you how good it feels to be in a place where I'm playing on a legendary radio station, Afro Man,
yeah.
Because I got high.
Yeah. And that is played at the end credits of Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. We'll do it again next week. We got a break here. We got the news coming up next, followed by Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich.